Welcome, everyone. All right, welcome. Welcome to our regular City Council meeting. For the record, we do have a quorum. Councilmember Makowetski is on a leave of absence. This is our regular Tuesday meeting. It's September 3rd, 2016. We do have a quorum, and we'll call the meeting to order. And with that, if we'll just start by a moment of silence, if you please join us. Thank you. And Chief Jones, would you lead us in the pledge?
Thank you. If you'll follow me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And with that, moving on to, we don't have any recognitions tonight. We do have some presentations, a closed session report. Mr. Pannoni, we have some reportable actions.
Thank you, Mayor. There were four items on the closed session agenda. All of them were discussed, and there were reportable actions on two of them. On CS2, the council directed staff to place on the next council's public consent agenda approval of a new master lease for the boatyard lease site and accompanying agreements. And on item CS3, the council authorized the city to join other San Luis Obispo County cities in filing a protest to the mitigation deal governing the closure of the Diablo Canyon plant to be sure the Slo City financial interests, all the Slo City financial interests are protected as a result of that closure due to the loss of the revenue to the countywide that is resulting from that closure due to the closure of the Diablo Canyon plant.
And that was Slo County cities?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for that. And with that, we'll move on to council and mayor announcements. And I think we have a street summit that's coming up, and I was going to look to Mr. Livick to give us a brief on our street summit coming up.
Excuse me. We do have our third annual street summit coming up. This time the format's a little bit different. Really, typically we held it at a Public Works Advisory Board. This time it's a open workshop, and it'll start with a presentation on some basics on pavement management, then go into the paving plan, a little bit on traffic control and traffic calming and bike and pedestrian planning, and then we'll open it up to public comment. And then following that, at our next Public Works Advisory Board, we'll take it back there for their recommendations on actions to be taken. And that's tomorrow night, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., right here at the Vets Hall. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. Any other council announcements to my right? John?
Good evening. It is once again time for you to prevent the outbreak of flu in Morro Bay with the onslaught of tourists that we continually have. I would suggest that you obtain immunity against the flu and get your flu shot. They're available at your doctor's office and local pharmacies, and it would be a good idea for you to be protected and to not spread that dread disease. So thank you.
Noah?
Yes, thank you. I just did want to give Mr. Buckingham a chance to give everyone a review of what we're anticipating for this year's Morro Creek cleanup and considering working on in the area to make sure that public health and safety is protected. So, Mr. Buckingham, if you wouldn't mind giving that update that you provided with us earlier.
Sure. Thank you, Councilmember Smuckler. Officer Rittering and Rob Livick and I walked the Morro Creek last Friday morning for about an hour and a half from where the creek hits the beach up to under the Main Street Bridge and well in probably half mile, quarter mile, into past the Mora Bay city line into the county line. The problem is not nearly as substantial as it was last year. There's probably about one-third the amount of garbage and waste in the creek as there was at this time last year, perhaps a little bit less. The number of people living in the creek is a bit less as well. So that's really good news on both those counts. There is a fairly substantial amount of garbage that appears to be the result of transient camping in the woods between Atascadero Road and the high school, really between the wastewater treatment plant and the high school. Doesn't there appear to be anybody camping there right now, but just a lot of garbage. So we are intending to do something very similar to what we did next year with a team effort from the city, likely with the California Conservation Corps folks assisting as well, to do a creek cleanup. We're shooting for the second or third week of October. We'll make sure we find a good date in there and have a good plan, make sure we take care of any personal property that may have been left behind, differentiate between that and trash, and then clean the trash out of the creek to prevent a public health problem with that stuff perhaps running onto the beach and into the bay when the rains come again.
Thank you for that. And I know from the social services element, we worked really hard last year to ensure that they're collaborated and coordinated with as much as possible in that outreach. And just want to let everyone know that, and have you confirm that that's planned on as well for this year.
Definitely. And Sergeant Cox will be attending the EBAC meeting, I think it's tomorrow or Friday, Thursday. And so Sergeant Cox from the police department will be attending that meeting. In part just to maintain our close relationship with EBAC and what the EBAC groups are doing, but also in order to get input and ensure that we're connected for the creek cleanup.
Great. Christine?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'll transition a little to two events I wanted to let you know about. One is a very, very fun event, and I wanted to let you know that everyone in Morro Bay is officially welcomed to the Cow Parade launch event. And what is the Cow Parade? It is the world's largest and most successful public art event is how it's being billed, and you may have seen some city Facebook posts that the city, through some tourism funds, and maybe a little city fund, I'm not quite sure the breakdown, but we have our own official cow, and it was beautifully decorated in coordination with our Morro Bay High School students and collaboration there. It's a fantastic looking cow, and we also, I understand there's a cow that has also been purchased by one of our business owners, and that cow has also been really creatively decorated, and I think that cow will be on the Embarcadero, perhaps at Windows on the Water, and I think that's halfway heifer, halfway between San Francisco and L.A., and then our cow is Muro Bailey, I believe, is our cow, and it's beautifully decorated with a lot of ceramic mosaics. So if you're curious, or if you want to avoid this crazy cow parade, I'll let you know where it is, you decide. So it is going to happen, the kickoff is at Madonna Meadows in San Luis Obispo, and it's this Saturday, the 17th, and it's a free admission event, and it's fantastic for kids as well. They're encouraging families to attend. It's from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., in the Madonna Meadows, right there off Highway 101. For purchase, there will be food, beer, wine, and ice cream. So if it seems like it's going to be a great event where you and your family can just romp around in the green with the cows. So looking forward to that. And then I should say that the cow that Muro Bailey will be at the Morro Bay Art Center. And these cows are going to be around for some of the fall time, a few months in the fall. So if you haven't seen our cow yet, you will. And then I haven't made an announcement about the library in a while, but I thought I would remind everyone that there is a Friends of the Library book sale coming up September 24th. And if you haven't been to the library lately, they have a great corner store that the Friends operate, which is doing quite well, and thanks to you who are shopping there and buying your books and magazines. But if anyone would like to go to the book sale, it will this time be in the library itself, so it won't be in the community center, so that's kind of a change in venue from the last few years. And it is on, again, September 24th, and the time, if you're a member, it's 9 to 10 in the morning, and for everyone else, it's 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. So thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. And I think that concludes our announcements. We do have speaker slips in the back for those who would like to for public comment for items coming up on the agenda. So just so you know, we do have speaker slips up there. If you please kindly turn those in, appreciate it. And with that, we move on to presentations. We have two presentations for tonight. Our first one is a presentation of scholarships by Friends of the Fire Department. And Mr. Chief Jones, I think you're the representative. Is that right?
That I am, Honorable Great. Mayor and Council. It's wonderful
Thank
to be
you.
Here tonight.
Welcome.
My name is Jeff Jones. I'm the president of the Friends of the Fire Department. And we're here tonight. We're pretty excited. We have a number of our board members. If I get you to raise your hand back there in the back. And great community people that are community-minded. But one of the things, back in 2004, under the leadership of a former chief, Mike Pond, he got together with the members of the community. And they decided that we had a need to help support our firefighters getting some of the educational requirements to transition from being a reserve firefighter to a career fire department. So under the leadership of some of the Friends members, Keith Taylor, Stan House, and Homer Alexander, they started a fundraising effort, and we sold bricks, which are on the new fire station today, and they're up underneath the flagpole and around the front of the fire station. And then also the Eastern Star was a big contributor, and then through some grants. But basically, we have a fund of about $60,000 that we use to help our firefighters embark upon a very hard career to get into. So to date, we've helped 14 people. We've donated about $7,200, not including this most current donation. All the awards have helped these people go to either a state-accredited fire academy or a nationally recognized paramedic program. There are five members who currently work for Morro Bay who have been awarded scholarships over the years. And the ones who have moved on, we are proudly serving their roots in Los Angeles City Fire, Cal Fire, Cambria, Camp Roberts Fire Department. And everyone that's received one of these awards is working in the fire service industry. So tonight, we have our full-time firefighter, Micah Shapansky. Close. I had a Shapansky in Santa Maria. I'm sorry. So, Sopinski. Okay, there we go. And Micah came to work as an acting engineer in 2014, and he was hired recently by the city. He lives in Los Osos with his wife, Taylor. Hired on originally as a reserve in 2006. And he went to the Cuesta College paramedic program, did his hospital clinical time down in the busy town of Santa Maria, so he got to see a lot of action. And then he did his internship both in Morro Bay and Napomo, so he has a good breadth of experience there. He just finished his National Registry certification, and he will be Morro Bay's newest paramedic within the next 30 days. So congratulations, Micah. And just so everybody knows, we're not cheaping out on giving them checks. They've actually already been given the checks, but with the fire season and everybody on fire assignments, we figured we'd come do the presentation after they had the money. So, and then we also want to recognize tonight's firefighter, Sam Watson. Sam lives in Morro Bay with his wife, Allie. He actually lives on a boat on the bay, which is very unique. He was a reserve firefighter in 2009. He was an EMT in 2015, appointed the following year as a limited-term firefighter for the city. He also went through the Cuesta College paramedic program. He performed his hospital clinical assignments also down in Santa Maria, so he's got a lot of good experience. I can attest to that personally. And he's still performing his field internship here in San Luis Obispo County and also traveling to Fresno County to get more experience. And we hope to have him as a paramedic with the department in the next 60 days. So congratulations, Sam. And the Friends has given each of these quality firefighters a scholarship award of $600 apiece to help them offset some of the costs that they incurred to go through the paramedic program, because as you well know, when they're hired, it's a condition of the job to be a paramedic, so the cost they incur to receive that certification is done on their own dime. So that's why we step in to see if we can help them. So, again, thank you for having us tonight. You have a great fire department, and with great leadership with Chief Knuckles, and, you know, we're here to hopefully keep it as one of the best in the county. So thank you.
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks for the Friends of the Fire Department. All right, thanks, you guys. Great job. Our next presentation is a Sea Otter Awareness Week presentation. We have a proclamation, and I'd like to invite Robichon, Sharon Blakely, and Janet Young. Robichon from State Parks and docents for State Parks. I'll meet you down at the podium and present this proclamation. Would you guys like to come down? So I'll go ahead and read the proclamation for you guys, and then I'll present the hard copy, and then you can say
just a few words.
Okay, good. All right. Well, thank you. Welcome. It's my pleasure to present a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay declaring September 8th through September 24th, 2016, as the 14th Sea Otter Awareness Week. Whereas the sea otter is a symbol of wildness, an integral part of California natural ecosystem, and serves as an indicator for the overall health of California nearshore marine environment. And whereas a growing awareness of the benefits of maintaining the health of the nearshore marine environment has raised public awareness in the sea otter. And whereas disease from a variety of sources, including land-based biological pathogens, accounts for a significant amount of the mortality of California sea otters in a given year, and whereas increased human viewing and other interactions with sea otters can have and have been detrimental effect on sea otter health, and whereas the survival of sea otter in California remains dependent upon continued public support and increased understanding of essential role of sea otters play in nature. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Morro Bay City Council does hereby proclaim September 18 through September 24, 2016, to be the 14th Sea Otter Awareness Week. So thank you very much, Robichon. This is your proclamation.
So I just want to make you aware of a couple of programs that you may already have noticed, but we have a program called the Sea Otter Experience, and it's out at Mora Rock on weekends from mid-June till the end of August. Janet Lang-Young is our co-coordinator and is out there at the Rock a number of times each summer, along with a lot of other docents. We also have a program called Sea Life Stewards that just started this year, and that places people in kayaks launching from the North T Pier and also down at the State Park Marina. So those two locations puts people on the water to help educate people who are in kayaks and on stand-up paddle boards and on the water about how they can watch not only sea otters but also marine birds and marine mammals like sea lions and harbor seals, just about how they can watch wildlife responsibly and not get too close to it. So those are two programs that we've been running. And then for Sea Otter Awareness Week, we're going to be having staff and docents at either Anchor Memorial Park or Target Rock or both on September the 18th, 20th, 21st, 22nd, and 24th. So thanks to our docents and volunteers that make all those programs happen. I'm kind of indirectly involved in all of our interpretive programs, but those programs wouldn't operate without docents and volunteers. So our thanks to them.
Great. Thank you, folks. And with that, we'll move on to public comment. And we have our the start for our public comment is our business spot, Jane Heath from the Maritime Museum. Come on up. Welcome. Turn that mic around. There you go.
You think I need a mic?
There you go. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. My name's Jane Heath. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, but I'm here tonight as a member of the board of the Central Coast Maritime Museum Association, a 501c3 tax-exempt nonprofit organization working to bring you the Maritime Museum of Morro Bay. We're here tonight to give you an opportunity to be part of something that's bigger than any of us and will live on long after most of us are gone. Imagine for a moment what our coastline looked like in 1542 when Spanish explorer Juan Cabrillo sailed his flagship San Salvador by Morro Rock, and legend has it gave it its name. 1542, just 50 years after Christopher Columbus bumped into Central America and hundreds of years before Europeans had more than a token presence in California. Now fast forward over 400 years to the waning years of the 20th century, when a handful of visionaries dreamed of a maritime museum in the shadow of the iconic Morro Rock. Today, in 2016, we stand on the brink of making those dreams a reality. Historic vessels have found their permanent home, a pad is poured, and a building is designed. I come here tonight to offer a unique, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take your place as a founder of the Maritime Museum of Morro Bay. The board of the museum is pleased to bring you our capital campaign to fund this building that you see on your screen. To coincide with the visit of the replica of Juan Cabrillo San Salvador, you have an opportunity to be a member of the 1542 Navigators Circle. For an investment of $1,542, a family, a couple, an individual, a business, or a group will have their name or a memory of another inscribed on a permanent fixture at our very first building to be built this coming summer. You only get one chance to be first, and this is it. The Navigator Circle is limited to a few dozen members, an exclusive club, to be sure. If you join us, in addition to the prestige of being first, you can join us for a private gala on October 1st at the South T Pier while the San Salvador is docked in our harbor to be hosted as tapas on the pier by the Gentoo's Papagayo, taste Kelsey wine, be entertained by Spanish music, and watch the Harbor Fest fireworks from the deck of the San Salvador, where you too can imagine Juan Cabrillo's first view of our beautiful harbor. If you're interested, please contact us by email at ccmma@morrobaymaritime.org or write to us at P.O. Box 1775, Morro Bay, California, 93443. But hurry so you don't miss out on any of the fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Okay, so now we'll get on to public comment. Thank you very much. And if we can reserve our clapping, if there's support for an item, if we can just wave, that will be helpful and appreciated. Thank you. Okay, thank you. And then with that, first public comment speaker slip we have is Robert Davis, followed by Erica Crawford.
Good evening. My name is Robert Davis, and I live in Morro Bay. I'm speaking tonight as a member of the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club to tell you about our big bike event that's coming to Morro Bay 10 days from now. The bike club is going to host its 45th annual Lighthouse Century Bike Ride on Saturday, September 24th. We expect about 1,300 bicycle riders on the route. They'll start riding at 7 a.m., we tell them that we require them to ride safely, to observe traffic laws, to share the road with cars, and to respect local residents. The starting point is Morro Bay High School. Cyclists will exit the high school parking lot onto Atascadero Road, turn left onto Highway 1, and ride north to the Elephant Seal Rookery and back to Morro Bay. We're going to close the lane at one lane at Toro Creek Bridge, because Caltrans doesn't leave enough shoulder for bicyclists to cross. Morro Bay Police Department will help direct traffic around the high school in the morning, and CHP will patrol the rest of the route. We will not allow cyclists to park their cars at Lila Kaiser Park on Saturday. The Lighthouse Ride is one of the club's two annual fundraising events, and we raise money to contribute to local high school and college scholarships and to support local nonprofits. This year, we will donate almost $100,000 from our two events to county schools and organizations. That includes donations to Morro Bay Police Volunteers, support for the Morro Bay July 4th Bike Parade, and a $2,000 donation to the high school. We are also donating $10,000 to the Morro Bay High School Boosters for providing lunches to the cyclists after they finish the ride. We also encourage the riders to spend the weekend in Morro Bay and to spend their money here. Last year, 89% of the riders spent one or more nights in Morro Bay. That is a significant boost to our city's economy, and we are proud that we can bring this to Morro Bay. We try to work with local communities and law enforcement to make the ride safe for everyone and to minimize the impact on residents. And we ask that everyone help us by passing the word to your neighbors about the ride. And if you need further information, you can call the club at 543-5973. Thank you.
Thank you, Red. Next is Erica Crawford, and then followed by Jude Long.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, City Council, and City Staff. My name is Erica Crawford. I'm from the Chamber of Commerce, and I'm just here to do a quick report on the Avocado and Margarita Festival, our Chamber's largest fundraiser of the year. Over the weekend, we brought over 9,500 people to Morro Bay for the festival. This could not have been done without the collaborative efforts of parties, so big thank yous are in order. First, to the residents of Morro Bay for sharing the city with so many. The California Avocado Commission, Calavo, Index Fresh, Del Rey, and all of our local avocado growers are to be thanked for their expertise and care working with such an incredible tasting fruit. Thank yous also goes out to our sponsors for the weekend. Everyone can read the avomargfest.com for a complete list of sponsors, but I want to recognize and thank the City of Morro Bay, the Inn at Morro Bay, Beach Bungalows Inn and Suites, and Heritage Oaks Bank for their support. Dead Air Dave and The Rock 97.3 for emceeing the event from the stage, and to Neil Farrell for running our sombrero contest. Thank you also to local Morro Bay businesses that participated in the Business Sombrero program this year, which was actually a real hit. So we're going to do that again and expand it next year. Thank you to our event manager, Kyle Beal Womack, and her crew. They all wear pedometers, and between Friday and Saturday, they clocked 15 miles on their feet. Each one. Thank you to Morro Bay Fire, Morro Bay Police, and Public Works. Kyle has been in contact with each of the agencies this week and has heard nothing but positive feedback, which is great news. That we increased security 190% and increased our trash cleanup was especially appreciated. Our volunteers, we couldn't do this without the 100 volunteers, 100 plus, from the high school music boosters, the high school cheerleaders and the Rotary, and our chamber board, and of course our Avocado Margarita Festival Committee. Frank Allegria, Bill Coy, and Darren Reichwein have been on the committee for 10 years. Jill Drexage, Travis Ford, and Cindy Edwards, Chamber Board Chair. But the numbers is what we want to hear. So 9,500 people out. That's for Taste of the Grove, the Friday event, and Saturday Street Festival. Morro Bay High School Music Boosters and Morro Bay Rotary were this year's beneficiaries, and they will receive over $10,000 for their volunteer efforts. Morro Bay Hotel occupancy was 90% over the weekend, with 24 of 36 hotels reporting that they were sold out. We have a SurveyMonkey out to all attendees of both events. So far, we've gotten 400 responses, so I'm really looking forward to getting into that data and reporting further. So thank you very much, Morro Bay.
Thanks, Erica. Great job, too. And with that, we have Jude Long, and then we have Walter Heath.
Hello, everyone. Thank you, Christine, for the preview on our event. I'm going to give a little bit more information. My name is Jude Long. I'm Publicity Chair for Morro Bay Friends of the Library. And we want you to mark your calendar for our huge book sale coming up Saturday, September 24th. From 9 to 10 is the members-only sale, and you can join at the door. From 10 to 3, the sale is open to all. And please note that the bag sale, we used to have a bag sale for $3, is no longer happening. But what you will find are good quality, new-looking DVDs, books, CDs, books on CD, and magazines at ridiculously low prices. All subjects will be available, including popular novels, mysteries, children's books, a new collection of books for teens, books for Halloween on horror stories, fine art, pictorial books, cookbooks, and other holiday titles. Now, this is our last big sale of the year, and all funds raised go to purchase materials and needed items for the library. We also fund year-round programs for children and adults, all of which are free to attend. We welcome donations of gently used books, magazines, and media during library open hours. So please stop by the library at 625 Harbor on Saturday, September 24th, and stock up your shelves with some good reads and some good entertainment. Thank you.
Thank you, Jude. Walter Heath, and then Trina Doherty.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Walter Heath, resident of Morro Bay. I've been asked tonight to offer some announcements from the Morro Bay Chamber due to the length of Erica's comments. I drew the short straw on the board to give you some announcements here. The first is next Wednesday, September 21st, from 3 to 5, at Windows on the Water, there will be a free seminar to help business owners use Google and Yelp to their advantage in developing business. This looks like a good seminar both for brick-and-mortar and non-brick-and-mortar businesses, but you must RSVP, so I'll put this up on the screen while I give you the next one. And the next one has to do with a chamber-sponsored event. It is the Candidates Forum on Monday, October 3rd, 2016, from 6 to 8 p.m. This is a free event for the public. It will be at the Morro Bay Community Center at 1001 Kennedy Way. And you can hear from the candidates for mayor and for city council. Please plan on attending this event because it's moderated by the League of Women Voters, who's known for their nonpartisanship, and the questions come from the audience. So we need an audience in order to have questions. Very important, but this will also be broadcast, and I'm assuming serially broadcast on Channel 20. So let me switch this one out so you can see that one. Last two messages quickly. The largest public art event in Morro Bay is coming back this year. It's the third annual Morro Bay Surfboard Art Festival. It's a 60-day exhibit of 28 pieces of surfboard art starting October 1st, continuing through December 1st. And then there will be an art sale of coastal-themed art. It's a curated show, so it's all surf-inspired coastal-themed art. And that sale will be at the Inn at Morro Bay on December 3rd, which is exciting for us. The unveiling event, the only time that all of the art will be together in one place at one time, is September 24th at Forever Stoked Gallery on Quintana Road. And that unveiling event will start at 4 p.m. Lastly, if you wake up on Saturday morning and you're in the mood for planting something, you can join the Morro Bay and Bloom crew at the Morro Bay Library. We have some plants, and the area near the entrance on Harbor Street is finally going to get planted. So if you're waking up on Saturday morning, we'll be there from 9 until 11. You're welcome to join us and plant some plants. Thank you.
Thanks, Walter. Trina Doherty, followed by Betty Winholtz.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Trina Doherty, resident of Morro Bay, president of Morro Bay Friends of the Library, and past president, for the first time I can say that, past president of Eco-Rotary Club of Morro Bay. And in following up on Jude's comments regarding our fabulous book sale, I'd like to fill you in on a little, a few more things that are happening at the library. So first of all, we hope you've had a chance to stop in and congratulate Mary Blair on her new position as branch manager. She's worked at the library for many years, and we're so fortunate to have her. We are also very lucky to be getting a new youth services librarian in the near future. The selection process is in the works, and we look forward to some new outreach efforts to our local youth and some great new ideas for our children's and teen collections and programs. As Jude mentioned, there are many wonderful programs at the library on a regular basis. One very special program coming up on September 30th at 1 p.m. is local historian extraordinaire Dan Krieger giving a presentation on Juan Cabrillo, the San Salvador, and our local maritime history. He is so interesting, and this should be a fantastic lead-in for your trip to the ship, which arrives on the 29th. So anytime you're at the library, a reminder to visit the Friends Bookstore, which was also mentioned. Thank you, Christine. You're so good. It is open at any time the library is open. It has an incredible selection of gently used books, CDs, DVDs, magazines, and the stock is always changing. Books start at $1. So with the holidays coming up, it's a great place to shop. So bottom line is that our library is a hub of activity, fantastic community resource, and there is something for everyone at the library. So be sure to stop in. Of course, come to the book sale on the 24th. There are some bookmarks and some program calendars on the back table for you. Now, with my Eco-Rotary hat on, I'm also here to tell you about a benefit concert that we have coming up on Thursday, September 29th at 7 p.m. at Coalesce Bookstore. Country music legend Bob Livingston will be our headliner with the Stereo Chickens opening for him. I know you'll come for them. Tickets are $20, and they can be purchased at Coalesce Bookstore anytime. There's only 60 seats available. The ticket proceeds will benefit the Morro Bay National Estuary Program's Volunteer Monitoring Program, which, among other things, provides water quality monitoring expertise and equipment for steelhead trout preservation. There's a specific piece of equipment that we aim to raise funds for, which is called it's a water level monitor called a pressure transducer. Okay, say that several times and we'll all be good. The data collected by this and other programs provided by the NEP help in the efforts to protect and preserve the ecosystem and habitat of our precious bay. There's a great article in Morro Bay Life if you want a little bit more information. It's the most recent article. So, thank you. See you,
thank you
at
Trina.
One of the two places.
All right. Betty Winholtz, followed by John Elliott.
Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz, and I won't be here for item C2, and so I'd like to speak to it during public comment. I want to make 4 points. The first point is the most unique statement I've ever heard in a staff report that says that it's okay for us to entertain a development that does not meet our standards because we can adjust them later. And yet this body is going to approve the concept of those items that are outside of our normal planning goals, and it's backwards. You know, we need to have the planning commission say whether something's in conformance before we approve it, and not assume that, oh, we're going to push the envelope and then we'll back off. That's not normal. It says in the report it's normal. Not in this town it's not normal, and it's not appropriate, in my opinion, for planning. And some of those violations are about height limits, setbacks, floating rooms. There's no discussion about parking. The view corridor is reduced to almost nothing. These are all exceptions to our code of planning. Our second point that I want to make about this development is that the assumptions that are being made. It says that we want to go after the high end, we want to attract the big new hotels, and that we know how to do this. I would remind the council that when we did the Marina Square, that was the hugest project we'd ever done down on the Embarcadero, and people thought it was beautiful and nice, but they did not want to see huge after huge after huge. And so this is another very long, huge project. It's over 150, 170 feet long, and I would suggest to you that kind of size building is not what people have said they wanted. They want the small, Morro Bay type of development. My third point is about the process. I'll go ahead and speak about process. You put out an RFP, but it was for one site, and two people responded to that. And yet this project came with somebody that was outside, very creative. It combined two of the Tideland sites, lease sites, together. I'm not sure that that's a fair advantage, because the staff report lauds the double development, but at the same time, the other people didn't know that that was a possibility. So I kind of question that way of making of equity when you're doing an RFP. And then my last point is that it talks about we're trying to maximize revenue on our tidelands, which is fine for the city, but I would just remind you that's not the goal of tidelands. It's for the benefit of the community, and that removing street ends does not increase access. Thank you.
Thank you. John Elliott, followed by Linda Merrill.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, and staff. I'm John Elliott, Morro Bay resident, business owner, and I represent our 2016 Halloween Committee. October 31st, 3:30 to 5:30 will be our third annual Halloween trick-or-treat event. Please view our flyer. Last year, about 300 children participated with their families. We are asking businesses in the downtown and Embarcadero to participate by decorating their business and handing out a treat during this year's event. Volunteers will be coming to the businesses to ask for your inclusion on the map. Businesses outside the map area, including home businesses, are encouraged to set up a table in downtown Morro Bay on Morro Bay Boulevard in the closed-off street area. Your business will be listed on the map. Please email info@morrochamber.org if your business or organization would like to participate. October 10th is the last day to respond. Take a look at the participation letter. So this year there'll be a map of downtown and the Embarcadero. So there'll be a double-sided map so that once the children pick up a map, they can trick-or-treat on the Embarcadero and downtown. This year, we've added a prize for the best decorated business, a haunted trolley, and much more. We also will still be doing our walking parade at 5 p.m. and costume contest at 5:30. We look forward to your support of this year's event and thank the Chamber of Commerce and the city for making this a signature event. We will be back here with more details. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, John. Linda Merrill.
Good evening, Mayor Irons, council members, and staff. My name is Linda Merrill, and I've lived in Morro Bay 35 years. My friends and I are here tonight to support the proclamation declaring September 18th, the 24th Sea Otter Awareness Week. I'm sorry, that's on the consent calendar A4. I hope it's okay to speak. Thank you so much for this proclamation tonight, and thank you for caring enough to ask our harbor director to reach out to all of the many organizations and people who attend to and provide safety to these animals. Also, many environmentalists have written the city to ask that fireworks be eliminated from our festivals in order to protect our wildlife. It isn't who we are. We'll be looking forward to the Sea Otter Awareness Week and participating in the activities surrounding this event. The State Park docents will put up their table full of interesting objects to educate children and people about the uniqueness of these animals, and many people will go out and enjoy these special treasures of our bay. Sincere appreciation, and have a great meeting. Also, I'd like to pass this on. Maybe Dana could put it somewhere you all could look through it. It's from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. And it's actually signed by the photographers, so it's kind of a nice, but maybe some of you would take a chance to go through this. And also, I took this picture and lucked out because we have many otters with like white heads, and sometimes they're difficult to photograph, but I just lucked out and some dark-headed ones were behind the white-headed ones. So anyway, one of those photographers' lucky shots. So thank you all very much for the proclamation. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Linda. And that concludes our public comment for tonight. I'm just scanning the audience to make sure. And with that, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. Don't think we have any responses, any comments from council to my right or my left? None? Okay. All right. With that, we'll move on to consent. And I don't have any speaker slips for any items on consent. Is there anybody who'd like to speak to anything on consent? I know, Linda, you already spoke. Okay. All right. So with that, we'll close public comment to consent, and we'll move on. I would take, unless, are there any items to pull? No? Do you have some?
I was thinking about A6.
So we have A6. Any other items?
A5.
Go ahead. Did you want
to? I would need to recuse myself from that, given my proximity.
And that's item eight.
Business?
A5?
Correct.
So we're going to pull items A6 and A5. A6 is Water Reclamation Facility Program Update. A5 is Quarterly Status on Parking and Lieu Fee Waivers. And our city attorney, you can make comments on that if you'd like. We could take a motion to approve, unless there are any other items, I'll take a motion to approve items 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7. We have a motion. And a second?
Second.
So a motion by Ms. Johnson, a second by Mr. Heading. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. We'll move on to item A6, and then we can go ahead and step down from item A5. A6, Water Reclamation Facility. Noah?
Yes, thank you. I did want to pull that one because we know the importance of the Water Reclamation Facility project to the community, and we did receive a fairly lengthy email asking some questions about an update on that, and I thought those questions were pertinent, and Mr. Buckingham's response to those were also important to let other people hear and be aware of them, as there is a lot of interest in this. So, Dave, if you wouldn't mind just taking a few minutes to give a brief review about where we are with the process forward and highlight some of the key factors going into the next steps.
Sure thing. Thanks. I'm happy to do that. And I think one of the emails I saw had an emphasis on what's the status of the MOU and on the process itself and can we go faster. So the answer to where we are and where we're going is we're moving diligently forward in all areas. When the council made their preferred site selection in early June, we pushed the start button on the environmental review process. That is moving forward. We undid the pause button and continued the facility master planning process, and we're starting to get outputs out of the facility master planning process already. Last week we got the draft facility master site plan. And so the process is moving, and moving pretty quickly. The MOU, we're working diligently on the MOU. We have met with the representative of the property owner several times. We have a further key meeting tomorrow morning at 2 p.m. With the representative of the property owner. the negotiations to this point, all of the terms and conditions from the property owner and us are essentially set and are all reasonable. They're nothing interesting or unusual. Bottom line is the city is going to pay whatever the fair market appraised value by a California licensed appraiser is for the amount of property that we need. We haven't been able to complete the MOU yet, however, because we needed that draft facility master plan so we knew how much property we would need and where to site it. So essentially the black and white of the MOU is set and generally agreed on. But what we need to do is meet, now that we know how many acres of space we need and how it'll fit best on the property, we can sit down with the property owner and draw lines on a map and agree that that's the amount of property that we're going to purchase. So that's why we could never finish the MOU until we had a draft facility master plan at any time in these processes, unless we went and just bought a big bulk of land to fit a sort of any conceivable wharf on. So we have that. Again, we have the draft site plan. We're going to sit down with the property owner tomorrow. I anticipate that that should go quite smoothly. We'll identify what property that we propose to purchase, and then that will go in the MOU. And we'll know better about the timing after our meeting tomorrow. But I don't anticipate we should have any significant issues completing the MOU in a timely fashion. On the process, there's been some interest in can we move the process along more quickly? And we have a 5-year timeline. As you know, we're shooting to be complete with phase one in June of 2021. It's important to compare apples to apples. So, for example, there's been some statement that other projects have been completed in, for example, a year and a half or 2 years, specifically one or two projects in Ventura County. Assuming that was referring to either the Santa Paula project or the Fillmore project, both of which are in Ventura County and fairly recent. The actual construction phase of those, digging dirt and pouring concrete, were in the 18 to 24 months category, but the permitting and planning process for Fillmore, for example, was 7 years. So we are intending to complete our process in 5 years. That one was 7 years. And there are some very specific time requirements, sort of PERT diagram gates that we have to go through. The Water Board won't accept an SRF loan application until the environmental documents are complete. It takes a year to complete the environmental documents, then takes 9 months normally for the Water Board to go through the State Revolving Fund application process. So those are two examples of lengthy. That's what, a year and 3/4 right there of permitting planning timeline before we can ever get to the construction period. So we're not aware. It's in everybody's best interest to move the project along quickly, and it's also in our interest to not move it along too quickly when we're talking about a $100 million project. We don't want to make mistakes or cut corners, but make sure we've done things diligently.
Thanks for that review, Mr. Buckingham. I just want to follow up, mostly focused on the public participation and then also council discussion and looking at some of the elements of that property and then also the MOU. Could you describe specifically where the citizens and then also the council will be built in to review the components of that site draft plan and have the discussion about some of the elements that we are due regarding things beyond just the specific WRF component of the project? We've talked quite a bit about needing to review that and confirm some of the different elements there.
For the MOU itself, once the staff gets a pretty firm MOU in place, we'll bring it to the council in closed session as part of a property negotiation and make sure the council looks at that and approves that before the city enters any agreement. With regard to the facility master plan, we are shooting right now. The timeline actually doesn't have the facility master plan coming to the council until December but we are, again, working hard to be proactive. We are hoping to bring that to the council at the second meeting of October right now. I'm not sure if we'll be able to do that, but we're working with the facility master plan to do that. The public has been, if your question is, when are we going to see what property is associated with the MOU, we can bring that to the council in open session as soon as we get that complete. Hopefully, likely won't be complete tomorrow, but in a few weeks ahead.
And we can talk more about that in closed session as far as how that would be rolled out and publicly reviewed, or would it be best to have some suggestions now as far as the details of the MOU?
The public rollout we should probably talk about in open session, not in closed session. But the negotiated details of the MOU, we should make sure that we have done that as a closed session negotiation before we go public with that.
Okay, yeah, I think because of the interest level and the importance of this project, also the expense, there's going to be quite a bit of interest in the details of the MOU, and I personally will be interested in building in ways to respect the confidentiality of those negotiations, but also provide the community with a chance to see those as appropriate and be able to make comments on those. So I'd appreciate staff thinking very hard about how to do that and respect the process. And I assume for the draft FMP, we're going to continue working some of these different elements through the WRFCAC and our Citizen Advisory Committee to make sure that that's another forum that's giving people a chance to tune in and make comment.
Absolutely. All of the facility master planning and environmental processes, all of that is gone through in detail in the WRFCAC.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, just for my own clarification, are you asking for something on the MOU to be brought to you before the MOU is brought to you in public?
Well, what I'm interested in is how do you see us respect the need for confidentiality and negotiations and closed session, but also give our community a chance to take a look at the concept and the MOU itself before it's finally signed? Is that how can we build that in because of how much interest there is in the project?
I'm assuming what we would do is we'd have a closed session with the MOU and bring it either on a consent item or a discussion item at a council meeting.
Perfect. Great. I just want to confirm that, make sure that everyone realizes we are going to have a closed session, but it's going to need to be improved in open session. And they'll get a chance to look at those conditions and terms. Thank you.
Thanks, Noah. Any other questions? Okay. Good. Okay. We can, the one thing on A5, so there's a couple things on this technicality-wise. We won't have a quorum to vote for A5, so.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say you were going to recuse yourself.
Councilmember Heading and myself will be recusing from those two items.
Based on that recusal,
I'm sorry. So the recusing on those two items, so previously when those two items were taken action, we both have properties in the downtown area. The waiving of the parking and lieu fee discussion was we recused ourselves from that, but there's some determination whether or not that was necessary or not. But at any rate, we recused ourselves from that discussion. There's an updated item. It's just a basically receive and file, but per our previous discussion, if we've been recused from that, we need to recuse ourselves from a receive and file on this. Is that correct?
The answer is going to be longer than...
Yeah, I know.
You did recuse yourself. Councilmember Heading actually wasn't here when that item was on the agenda. You recused yourself, even though I felt that you didn't legally have to recuse yourself because of the fact that 25% of the commercial property in the city total is in those areas that we're talking about. So at least 25% of the properties are being affected by that suspension. So therefore, you didn't have to recuse yourself. But you felt that you it would be better for public interest for you to recuse yourself, so you did. To be consistent with that, you're going to recuse yourself again, and because of the reason you're recusing yourself, Councilmember Heading is also going to be recusing himself. Based on that, you only have two members now. You can't adopt, you can't receive, the action that's being called for tonight is to receive and file this report. You can't do that because you only have two members. And you also can't, you know, typically when you have a conflict of interest, you pull a name out of a hat. You can't do that because you don't have all five members, and this isn't required to be done. There's no time frame this to be done with, so pulling a name out of the hat doesn't work. So the bottom line is, this is going to not be approved tonight, and we'll come back to you when there's three council members who can vote on it.
So do we need to technically recuse ourselves and step down from the meeting?
No,
that one is, it's just going to be continued.
If there was a fifth council member and it was going to be approved, because it's not a consent, you don't have to remove yourself from the dais. You just have to announce on the record that you're recusing yourself from that vote.
Okay. So
item
A5 is going to be continued. Okay.
So I don't believe we made a motion to approve A6.
Right. I was just covering that. So with that, A5 will be continued. Item A6 will take a motion to approve item A6.
So moved.
Second.
A motion by Mr. Smuckler, second by Mr. Heading on item A6, our water reclamation update. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. And that concludes our consent. It's 7:03. Are we in need of just a short break before we get started, or are we all ready to go? All ready to go? Okay, good. With that, we'll get on with item C1. Item C1 is Sea Otter Awareness Week. Moving on to our first business item, I believe Mr. Andersby is going to start us off on that.
Thank you, Mayor Irons. We have a nice, easy softball queued up for you here today. Sea Otter Awareness Week. Update from council objective, goal objective. Not quite sure if this otter is picking a fight or what he's doing, but chose him to be our representative otter for Sea Otter Awareness Week here. So. So this is just a receive and file item. No actions requested at this time to be taken by the City Council. It's just informational, no fiscal impacts, just staff time and putting together our efforts for Sea Otter Awareness Week. The background of this was a 2016-17 goal objective for Goal 8, which is enhanced quality of life. Objective C, take specific action to raise awareness of sea otter protection practices and participate in the 2016 Sea Otter Awareness Week. We have four approved work plan elements for this objective. One is to continue assisting with the establishment of Morro Bay specific education awareness materials. That's being conducted with the folks mainly up in Monterey Bay and Fish and Wildlife folks that are developing Morro Bay specific. Still haven't come out with all the materials, but they're still working on it. And element number two is engage our stakeholders, identify opportunities and ideas, and bring to the Harbor Advisory Board for input. Then implement those recommendations and then participate in Sea Otter Awareness Week, which, as we heard earlier, is September 18th to the 24th, which is a Saturday to Sunday format, or Sunday to Saturday format. To date, we have assisted state parks, and great thanks go out to Rubishana and his crew for both the sea otter tables, the sea otter experience tables that they put out at Target Rock through the summertime on weekends, and also for putting together their sea life stewards, who are folks on kayaks that go with training, both educational awareness training and safety training. We help them with their water safety training so they can get out on the water and advise folks that are getting too close to the otters to stay back and give them sea otter savvy viewing tips, which is the sticker on the right there. That's the sticker that we're helping those folks hand out. They've been to all of our kayak venues, kayak rental venues, to put on their kayaks. I sent some of my staff today to go bring one of those, but apparently everybody's out because they're so popular. So still working with Sea Otter Savvy on distributing those stickers. Collaboration with Fish and Wildlife is continuing, and we brought our ideas to Harbor Advisory Board on August 4th for their input on our different ideas. Initially, we had thought that we were going to have some sort of a seminar in the Vets Hall or maybe up at the Rec Center. Interest was more with the state parks folks and the Fish and Wildlife folks with continuing their efforts and maybe ramping up their tables, their sea otter experience tables through the week. So they have endorsed the plan generally. They had some recommended changes, a couple of which we're implementing. Ideas brought forward are being implemented in our plan effort number 4 there. So again, in collaboration with State Parks, again, they're the really heavy lifters on this, and the Sea Life Stewards, Sea Life Savvy, and our own tourism manager. We've helped State Parks with their Sea Otter Experience Tables. They're going to be bringing those, I think, as Ruba Shana brought up, the 18th, the 20th, 21st, 22nd, and 24th. Weekends at both Target Rock and Anchor Park, and weekdays only at Target Rock. Throughout that, we'll be sure we post that information on our website so the dates are there. State Park Natural History Museum and NEP both have displays throughout the week of different sea otter materials and sea otter educational materials throughout that week. And the sea otter stewards, sea life stewards, will obviously still be on the bay throughout the week as well. And we're also doing outreach to other organizations. We did, through Jennifer Little and our tourism division, a pretty big information blast out to media sources and school sources to try and get our kids aware of what's going on, see if they can bring some school organizations out for the week. And to the Camp Keep, the Kern County Environmental Program, outreach to them to make sure they're aware of what's going on. So in conclusion, lots of great activities happening, and just take everybody's encouraged to take advantage and get out and see what there is being offered. Any questions?
Certainly. Any questions to my left? No? Questions this way? We don't have any public comment for that, so I won't have to worry about opening up for public comment. I will make some comments. I would compliment the Harbor Department on their sea otter awareness efforts. I know it was earlier in the year we had some comments about how our interactions are around sea otters as far as whether they're paddle boarders, some of the vendors, and sightseeing boats and whatnot, and had the experience over the summer with some friends on one of the vendors, and they did a great job in educating folks on what the do's and the don'ts. So the outreach from the Harbor Department, I could testify, works. And so I just want to make some compliments there to your department on that. So those are all my comments. Anything over here? Christine?
Yes, I think it's exciting. I'm sure we'll be sending out a press release to let at least our local press know it's Otter Week and, you know, get a lot of people out to see that. But I just want to remind people that the reason we're doing this is really because it was brought up at our goal-setting workshop. And one of the members of the public came forward and said, we really have this fantastic, incredible, amazing experience here for all of us, and seeing the sea otters every day in our lives, let's celebrate them. So it's an example of why you can come to a goal-setting workshop and make a recommendation, and it ends up as a goal, and not just a goal, but a really exciting event that I'm sure now will be a tradition that we do every year. So just wanted to point out that people always forget how things get on the agenda and why the heck the city's doing this or that. And, well, you know, it's because we get lots of great input from the public. So I just wanted to make that note and to thank that person who brought it up.
Thanks. Thanks, Christine. John?
Yes, thank you. And I echo what Christine said, and I have experienced directly some of the activities of the program with my grandchildren, who also thank the city for this great recognition, and now we have this week of celebration for our sea otters, and I'm hoping that you know, we'll continue this notion of looking at our wildlife and look at what other species we might be able to get involved with in terms of education, protection, and also the availability of viewing for not only our city, but folks that come to our city. So thank you to our partner organizations and Eric and your department for just a great job. So appreciate it.
Thanks, Noah.
Yeah, I'll just echo everything that was said and also point out the importance of the education effort that is done mostly through volunteers and quite a bit through the state parks, and just how many people come here and may be seeing otters and experiencing our estuary for the first time, and this education effort really can help them learn and appreciate just how sensitive and special it is, and hopefully that translates into them taking more care and spreading that message. And the Harbor Department, I think you've really stepped up and come up with an innovative program that I completely agree. I'd like to see it continued, and great work on that.
Thanks. And any other comments?
I was just going to make the point that Ms. Johnson did about goals and objectives, and so the goal and objective season starts again on the 15th of November. So we'll look forward, but staff is always taking notes from anything that we get from the community, and we keep a running list of things for next year, but that's exactly how we're celebrating this, is because a great member of the community submitted to the staff and the council during our goal and objective setting season. So that starts 15 November, and we'll hopefully conclude about late February with council approval of our next set of goals and objectives.
Great. And with that, this is just a presentation. Eric, thanks very much for that. And that'll conclude item C1, and we'll move on to you want to take one quick break before we get started on this? Okay. So we're thinking we might have a little bit longer discussion on this next item, so we'll just take a 5-minute recess, and then we'll come back and get started. Thank you. Okay, folks, we're ready to get started? Sure, ready. Okay, welcome back, everyone. Next item on the agenda, item C2, discussion and approval of conditional consent of landowner pertaining to the lease site 87-88 and 87W-88W located at 833 Embarcadero. And our staff report on this, Mr. Buckingham.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. This is going to be a bit of a tag team staff report because this item, like many, have important involvement from several departments and several perspectives. So I'll sort of be covering the economic development perspective, and Mr. Graham, the planning and land use perspective, and Mr. Endersby, the harbor perspective. So the purpose of this presentation is to provide the council an update on the RFP process for lease site 8788. We'll refer to that as the off-the-hook site just for ease of reference. So the off-the-hook site as we speak this evening is lease site is the off-the-hook lease site there. Adjacent to it is the Libertine lease site. And the purpose is to receive council direction and then approval for next steps. The staff's recommendation in the staff report is to grant a conditional consent of landowner to KNC Development in response to the RFP, and to have that consent of landowner conditioned on KNC and on staff and Planning Commission refining the project to ensure compliance with the waterfront master plan and the centennial stairway concept. An alternative recommendation that you might consider is to direct staff to work directly with KNC to refine the project for compliance and then bring a refined project to the council for final consent of landowner. That is a very similar, actually identical process to what you used for the aquarium last year. You directed staff to work directly with the Central Coast Aquarium to bring a consent of landowner agreement to you. It's probably important to note here, and Scott will likely cover this a little bit further, but it is normal at this stage in the process. This is consent of landowner, and what normally happens after this is a very long process of developing concept plans and ensuring compliance and maximum public benefit for any project. So it is not unusual at this state or at this stage to have areas of a project that need to be tweaked, that need to be refined to improve public benefit or to better meet compliance with our various plans. That often happens after consent of landowner is granted. The fiscal impact of this project, KNC is planning a $11.5 million investment in the site. Their projections are that they would average about $360,000 a year over the first 10 years of revenue to the city, And those projections are consistent with the staff's independent projections that we did as we looked at the project. Additionally, the city will require a substantial investment in the implementation of the Centennial Parkway revitalization project that is adjacent to the proposed redevelopment. So we're projecting about $360,000 a year of revenue to the city's general fund and harbor fund, and then additionally an investment on the part of the developer on the Centennial Parkway end that's adjacent to this site, and we'll go into some more detail on that. A brief summary of the proposal. KNC is a partnership between Mr. John King and Mr. Burt Caldwell. Both are experienced regional developers, and at least Mr. King, an experienced hotel operator. Importantly, the Boutique Hotel Collection is the management company of Mr. King's company and of that KNC will use to provide hotel management for the project. So there is an established hotel management company that's associated with this proposal. Mr. Caldwell, and this is important to the way this whole thing, this sort of unique proposal, Mr. Caldwell holds current consent of landowner from the city council for redevelopment of the Libertine lease site. So earlier this year, I believe it was in late March, the city council granted Mr. Caldwell consent of landowner for a certain project on the Libertine lease site. That consent of landowner can't be withdrawn unless Mr. Caldwell defaults in some way, and he has not done that. And so he has a sort of a firm hold on the development or the redevelopment and the reinvestment in the Libertine site. This proposal envisions removal of both the Libertine and off-the-hook buildings and the construction of a single new building on what would be two combined lease sites. So it's probably easier to see this graphically and to explain it graphically. This is a slide that you've seen as recently as 2 weeks ago at the at our goals update, and shows some of the revitalization efforts in our downtown Embarcadero Center sort of link area. At the top left, you see it's labeled the off-the-hook revitalization. That blue rectangle at the top left is the off-the-hook lease site. And right below that is the Libertine revitalization, and that is, the Libertine lease site. We'll go into a little more detail on this, but the large green area that runs from the street end just south of the Libertine across the Embarcadero through the chessboard and public bathroom area up Centennial Stairs and to the area adjacent to Dorns and Testazio's, that is the Centennial Parkway link concept. So you see that that right now Mr. Caldwell holds consent of landowner to do a single redevelopment of the Libertine site, which is the large or the long red triangle there, and then the off-the-hook revitalization project is the blue one above that. So what this project proposes is, instead of having that red project and the blue project on the top left, to have a single lease site, and that's shown there in the yellow. So it envisions, instead of having two separate projects, to have one project that is under single ownership, is a single building, and sits on two combined lease sites. So that's a brief summary of the proposal. I'll turn it over to Mr. Endersby now for a little bit of the history.
Thank you. So historically speaking, back in June 2013, the owners of the Libertine and off-the-hook sites proposed a combined redevelopment of those sites under two ownerships. That's when we went to those leaseholders and asked them what their plans for the lease site were, with the leases coming within 5 years of expiration. They proposed a joint mixed-use building with restaurant retail on the ground floor, hotel on a second floor, And again, it's for a jointly built and managed building with separate ownership of the building, halves, separate lease site ownership with some shared lobby and other common area uses. Council heard this proposal, rejected it, based mainly on concerns about joint separate ownership of the lease sites and some experiences we had with other lease development proposals that incorporated multiple lease owners and our history with that. Next slide, Dave. So, history on Libertine. Back in late 2013, Council approved a consent to landowner for demolition and reconstruction of a brewery and restaurant on the Libertine site. Earlier this year, I think Dave said it was in March, Mr. Caldwell approached the city with a modification to that COL, which the City Council granted, to maintain the existing building, do some pretty significant modifications to it, but retain its general construction and build upstairs TOT producing occupancy, hotel occupancy on the second floor. And I think they proposed 11 hotel rooms on the upstairs. Recent history on the off the hook. The previous leaseholder, previous to the one that's there now, faced over multiple years continued financial challenges. In 2016, a consent of landowner had been granted to that leaseholder back in probably the same time as Libertine, late 2013. 2016 of January this year, the council reconsidered that consent of landowner and withdrew it based on non-performance of the parameters of that consent to landowner and the continued financial challenges. But they did direct staff to go back and work with a single party, which is proposer B in this RFP process, to see if they can come back and work out a deal where that proposer could come in and gain control of the lease site, redevelop it, get a handle on the financial challenges, and bring that site into conformity. April 2016, although they were close, they didn't quite get there, as you recall, and council directed staff to put out a full and broad RFP. So this lease expires March of 2018. We're now down to about 18 months. We released the RFP in early June of this year, consistent with the council guidance, encouraged at least second floor hotel use, among other things. We broadcast it fairly far and wide, got pretty good interest in it. We had a mandatory pre-proposal meeting that had, we had it in the City Hall conference room. It was pretty packed, including people standing against the walls, or sitting against the walls. Had a good, probably represented about 7 to 8 parties. Three responsive parties we received proposals from. Staff put together our, per the RFP, we put together an evaluation team. The team consisted of the city manager, the community development manager, the harbor director, the chairman of the planning commission, a resident with significant national and visitor serving development experience, and another third generation resident with service industry business experience. So those six folks sat down a good part of a day in August and reviewed those proposals, and we had a strong and unanimous recommendation to go with the KNC proposal. Subsequently, staff individually met with the three proposers for follow-ups, mainly just having a question and answer and get a little more detail that wasn't necessarily evident on their proposals and tease out some more information. Follow-up meetings really confirmed our recommendation for the KNC proposal as being the strongest development team. Subsequent meeting with KNC has confirmed their willingness to work collaboratively. As Dave spoke earlier, there's inconsistencies with this project. There always are when projects are first proposed, including the other two proposals. But the KNC development team is pledged to work collaboratively to try and resolve and work to resolve all those inconsistencies.
Next subject area is to talk about the Centennial Parkway concept plan that that we've all been working on for about 18 months. So as noted, both of these lease sites are adjacent to the Centennial Parkway, and Centennial Parkway is at the really at the center of the proposed downtown waterfront link and revitalization effort. The community is completing an 18-month process to revision Centennial Parkway into a single integrated space. This has been a great long process. Actually, this first started actually in the LEAP process and then was placed on the city's FY 15-16 goals and objectives in February of 2015. It was budgeted for in the budget process then. Our contractor has led a large number of stakeholder outreach events. The staff has led public outreach events also and stakeholder outreach events with Embarcadero leaseholders and hoteliers and others. In June, there was a well-attended public design workshop here in this room to vision and get additional public input and really start putting crayons to paper on what could be. Actually, in February of this year, two council members presented this concept of an integrated space to the Coastal Commission at their meeting here, just as a as example of some of the things that the City of Morro Bay is doing to improve access to the coast. Staff is going to bring the two final concepts to the city, actually first to the to a joint meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board, the Planning Commission, and the City Council on late afternoon of September 27th, and then to the Council in our next Council meeting to bring those two final concepts that that the public and the contractor have developed, to choose the best parts of both those, and then we'll send the contractor away to refine that into a single concept. All of the concepts from really the beginning have envisioned the street end between the Libertine and Roses as a pedestrian plaza and part of an integrated parkway space. That has been something that's been consistent really all along in this process. Here's a picture similar to the last one, but this is actually a picture of the slide that was showed to the Coastal Commission in February. What it notes here is you see the Centennial Parkway there in green, and that the city is considering a redesign of Centennial Parkway to link the Embarcadero with the downtown better. This is actually a very early parkway concept sketch. It was very early in the process. This is not one of the final draft proposals, but what this shows from the sort of the right side of the picture is you can see the big white spot in the center, halfway right. That's D'Estasio's, the triangle. Dorn's would be just above that. This concept, again, this is an early concept, and just to give you an idea of what the public's been working on for some time, but you see how there's an integrated plaza space, a continuous space from the top of the current stairs down past the chessboard and bathroom, across the Embarcadero, and into that street end that's between the Libertine site and the Roses site. So to sort of briefly summarize the Centennial Parkway piece of this, the downtown and Embarcadero at Link at Centennial Parkway grew out of public input at LEAP. It was on the 15-16 goals and objectives. The community's been working together on this concept, and it's been really a great process in many ways, from formal large meetings to small stakeholder interviews, one-on-one stakeholder interviews, to smaller group meetings, to a public design workshop. Probably an important part of this, though, is the City of Morro Bay right now does not have the resources to implement the concept that we're gonna eventually determine is the concept we want to move to. It'll require private investment in order to implement this, which is sort of a normal process for cities such as us. The Bayside portion of the concept is adjacent to the Libertine and the Off the Hook lease sites. It's technically adjacent to the Libertine site, and it's one lease site away from the Off the Hook lease site. And the KNC proposal could and should contribute significantly to the implementation of this concept on the west side of the Embarcadero. So at least the green space that's on the west side of the Embarcadero there, we would expect that KNC would implement that portion of the concept, and the city will work to figure out how the rest of the concept gets implemented. Eric?
So the city does have a policy and a history of combining small and narrow lease sites into more usable spaces. quoting out of the current lease policy, city's lease policy, leases that are not renewed should be put out to bid or kept in short-term interim lease arrangements until adjacent sites become available for consolidation. There's another entry that states lease expiration dates should be encouraged to coincide where adjoining sites may have mutual planning benefits. And a third citation, in some cases, the city should not renew a lease either for the purpose of consolidating sites or to pursue other extenuating public benefit. That all, again, comes from our lease management policy. So obviously this may not be warranted in all cases, but in this case, it does meet all those policy parameters and comes really at a pivotal time and location in the city's revitalization efforts, as previously discussed with Mr. Buckingham, and all the Centennial Stairway area and linked to downtown. The last, our most recent historical lease site consolidations were the Dutchman. That were several, two or three lease sites, I believe, that was combined in the early 90s, and then Marina Square took an entire block. I don't know how many lease sites that started with, but took an entire block and redeveloped that. In terms of size, from our smallest, strictly speaking, the Morro Bay Aquarium and probably Kayak Horizons are probably our smallest. Otter Rock, Libertine, all come in around 50 feet. Anderson, 75. Off the Hook comes in at 75. The proposed Libertine Off the Hook site comes in about 127, which is very consistent with the Boatyard and the Dutchman on either side. Not too far off from Rose's Landing as well, which is another recent redevelopment. Marina Square combined, that's Marina Square North and South. There's two separate leases there, even though it's one large redevelopment split in the middle in the elevator shaft somewhere there. Both those lease sites combined are 272 feet. So the proposed new lease site is similar in size to others in that part of the Embarcadero, Boatyard, Rose's, Dutchman, half the size of the Marina Square site. One reason some investors choose not to submit proposals for this off-the-hook site is it's challenging economics of smaller locations. We've definitely heard that feedback, and I've heard it outside of this RFP process as well, that small sites aren't necessarily the best for certain cases. And if we don't combine these sites now or do something different with them now, really and enter into separate leases with these two folks, with two different entities, there's not going to be another opportunity for 40 to 50 years because the redevelopment of those is probably going to result in at least anywhere in 40, 50 years long.
One quick comment here on hotel operations and stock. So the city has a recent record of encouraging appropriate development of hotel opportunities on the Embarcadero. Libertine is a good example of that. Back in March, we approved a consent of landowner for Mr. Caldwell's redevelopment of Libertine with 11 second floor hotel rooms. And actually, the RFP for this project, the council guidance on this RFP was to encourage second floor hotel rooms. Two separate hotels on two smaller lease sites does not make the best use of space. So two separate buildings, two separate lease sites would require two elevators, two lobbies, two cleaning rooms, two offices, two reception areas, and so that doesn't necessarily maximize the make the best use of what is very limited space on the Embarcadero, on the Bayside especially. Another consideration is that hotels in the 30 room size category are generally financially more sustainable than very small operations. Morro Bay is one place where because of the uniqueness of our location, that some very small operations do quite well. But generally, in the hotel industry, 30 rooms is about the right size for a long-term sustainable project. Another note is that Morro Bay has fewer hotels that are in sort of the higher end of hotels, and that one of the inputs received from much of our economic development outreach over the last year plus has been to encourage the addition of some higher-end lodging opportunities. Some of those inputs, so the Downtown Waterfront Strategic Plan stakeholder mini meetings conducted by Michael Baker International as part of our General Plan Local Coastal Plan update and our Downtown Waterfront Strategic Plan, that's one of the inputs that we've received through that is to encourage the addition of some higher-end hotels. The Economic Development Strategic Plan process that we went through in March, April, May, again with a fairly significant number of stakeholder outreaches. We heard the same thing through that process. Staff-led stakeholder meetings with the Tidelands Trust leaseholders, especially representatives of retail and restaurant businesses along the Embarcadero, state the same thing. Most of the 15-plus Opportunity Morro Bay economic development outreach sessions that that Scott and I and other staff have conducted, we heard the same thing. And staff economic development business or visits to different businesses, I try to on a weekly basis personally go and spend an hour with a business, and that's especially for many of our retail restaurant businesses, that's one of the themes that we hear is to have a better balance of some higher end rooms to really do a number of things, and one of those things is help with some of our retail and our restaurant businesses. Scott?
Thanks, Dave. So next slide really circles back around to that consistency issue with our development plans. This is the consent of landowner process. You know, my experience with that since I've been here and in looking back through city records is that a lot of times consent of landowner is given on planned development that's little more than sketches. Not the situation that was resulting from the RFP process. We got some fairly detailed plans out of that. But oftentimes what is consent of landowner has been granted on is sketches, and those projects oftentimes don't have enough sufficient detail to determine whether they're consistent with the plans, applicable plans or not. And oftentimes when you delve into them, they end up not being consistent. And so you work through that consistency issue. After consent of landowner is issued and authorized by the council, but as you're going through the concept precise plan process is where we bring the project into compliance, where we get the more detailed sets of plans, and where we're working much more closely with the developer and the applicant to bring plans into the projects into consistency with our current plans. In this case, primarily being the waterfront master plan. Our overall approval process, from a discretionary approval standpoint, is you go through and complete the precise plan process. That goes through review by the Planning Commission and City Council for the conditional use permit. And then once you receive approval from Council for that, the applicant goes off to the Coastal Commission and then gets approval for a coastal development permit, hopefully for the same plan. Sometimes the plan's altered. And then the applicant would come back while that process is ongoing at Coastal and work through the Harbor Department for the master lease agreement. And then the applicant hopefully gains approval through the Coastal Commission, Coastal Development permitting process, and returns to the city. And if they're and then goes through the precise plan process where they would bring forward any changes to the plan that resulted from Coastal Commission review. Next slide. So we're going to now talk specifically about the individual proposals. First one being Proposal A, which is the recommended proposal. It combines both the off-the-hook lease site and the Libertine lease sites. Creates a new 30-room hotel with ground floor improvements that would include a brewery and distillery along the property frontage on the Embarcadero. Would have food service and a bar venue, the sale bar, if you looked at the plans, and seven hotel rooms also on the lower floor. There's a sand pit play area that would sit adjacent to the Centennial Parkway street end that Dave referred to earlier. And then that design also preserves the existing view corridor that currently exists between the off-the-hook lease site and the boatyard site. Moving to the second floor improvements, there would be 15 hotel rooms. And then back to the water lease component of this, you would have what is probably the more unique aspect of the proposal would have a floating honeymoon cottage and seven other rentable sea cottages as well. You can have the site plan over there. So what you see is Embarcadero at the top, water at the bottom. The floating sea cottages there are the ones in blue. You have the retail components at the top of the page for the distillery and brewery. And then to the right, you see also included in the application or the design here is a parking area. This is the area that, that Dave referred to. That it would be part of, is going to be part of the Centennial Parkway plan, and because it's included in this proposal as an option, we would be looking to have the applicant move forward with the project to include the improvements that are that come out of that Centennial Parkway process. They would be implementing those improvements, at least for that piece that's on the west side of the Embarcadero. Next page. You have a perspective sketch here that shows the sea cottage, floating sea cottages moving back into the site, and then the street end is less visible, and then the kind of a rendering of what the hotel would look like perspectively. Moving on to the proposal B. Proposal B includes a replacement of the existing off-the-hook building with a single building, so a similar footprint that's occupied by the off-the-hook building now. You would maintain that similar view corridor down the middle, or down the right-hand side of that proposal, to the north side between that and the boatyard building. That proposal would include ground floor improvements of two retail shops on the Embarcadero side of things, a food court and common seating area on the bay side of the development. Towards the inner plaza area, there would be a yogurt shop and children's play area. The second floor would include at least six hotel rooms. And then the water lease side would have the ability to accommodate two side tie slips. We have a rendering of the plan, so you have the lower floor plan at the bottom there. You can see to the left is the water, to the right is the Embarcadero. You see the two lease retail lease sites to the right, and then the seating area for the restaurant use to the left. The sketch at the top would be for the hotel rooms on the second floor, and then the right would be a rendering, the upper right would be a rendering of the children's play area for the project. And then, next slide. We have a rendering of the of what the building would look like. So you have in the foreground the proposed proposed project, and then to the right of that is the existing Libertine building. Proposal C takes a little bit of a different tact for developing the site, and removes the existing off-the-hook building and replaces it with two buildings. Each building would be pushed to the outer extent of the lease site, abutting the Libertine and then Boatyard building with a 20-foot wide central plaza area that serves as also the view corridor through the site. You would have ground floor improvements on the north building of four retail shops facing in towards the plaza. The south building would have a single retail shop and a restaurant to the bayside of the building. And then, again, the pedestrian plaza and seating area in the center. This one on the second floor between the two buildings would you would have on the second floor of each building would total nine sort of vacation rental type units. And then the water lease component of it would have two, again, two side tie slips similar to Proposal B. And we have a rendering of the site plan here. You see the smaller building to the at the top of the screen and the larger building to the bottom with the plaza through the center. In this, and then the next slide includes the building renderings. And so at the top you see the sort of view corridor that runs down the center. And then the renditions below that are the you sort of see the balconies and the storefronts that are facing into that internal plaza. The next slide is a comparison, a general comparison of the development experience of the proposers. So for the proposal team A, you have substantial commercial development experience, substantial coastal development permitting experience, and then experience with both retail, restaurant, hotel, and resort destination type development. Proposal B, in our analysis and looking through the proposals, didn't have any commercial development experience. And had limited coastal development permitting experience, limited to single-family home type development. Proposal C had some commercial development experience and then some experience with the development of multifamily housing. The coastal development permitting experience on Proposal C was limited to a single-family home. Next slide is experience related specifically to hotel development and operations. For Proposal A, you have a substantial hotel development and operational experience, examples being Cliffs, Sea Venture, Sycamore Springs, Apple Farm. They also, as Dave mentioned before, the operational component for their the hotel operation here would be their boutique hotel collection management component that operates in a boutique hotel elsewhere. Proposal B does not have any hotel development experience or management experience. The concept behind management of those units would be potentially through some subtenant agreement on the site. At least that's what was conveyed. Proposal C, again, no hotel development experience, but they would be utilizing a property management system for managing the 9 vacation rentals they would have here effectively. That's a fairly common way to manage these types of units. And then turning it over to Dave.
Some of the comparison on the financial side. So first on financial capacity of the different proposers, Proposal A, that team demonstrated substantial financial depth, especially when compared to the other two proposers. Their packet included strong lender relationships and backing. Additionally, their packet demonstrated cash on hand to complete the entire project and more. Proposals B and C primarily demonstrated capacity to secure financing to do the project that they proposed. One of our general concerns along the Embarcadero after 70 or 80 years of revetments and seawalls and things is what do you find when you start doing redevelopment there? And redevelopment costs can go up fairly quickly based on building on what can be an unknown there and with seawalls and revetments that are not always in great shape. So it is of interest to have an investor who has substantial financial depth to perhaps even go beyond what the proposed project is in order to deal with what can be significant contingencies. On the economic benefit side, a number of things that we all need to think through. First, that in this area, the city receives primary revenue from three sources. One is the minimum rents and the percent grosses, and those proceeds go to the Harbor Enterprise Fund. And that's minimum rent is essentially paying for the dirt that the development sits upon, and then the percent gross is a percent that the city takes of gross proceeds that are generated on the site. According to lease agreements, that's normally 5%, 10% for some items. The other revenue source that the city receives is sales tax that comes to the general fund, and that sales tax would normally come from, for example, a retail store or a restaurant in the Tidelands Trust. And anywhere else in the city. And then transient occupancy tax to the general fund is another key source of revenue. The minimum rents based on square footage of the lease sites, all three proposals will pay about the same minimum rents, or maybe precisely the same minimum rents because the square footage of the actual lease sites is exactly the same. The percent gross that the city might expect that would go to the Harbor Enterprise Fund, that can be well assessed by comparing the projected TOT and sales tax. A project that has higher projected TOT and sales tax will, by right, have higher percent gross, and so that's a good way to measure that. Sales tax per square foot is in the $2 to $4 range for retail and restaurant. We spent a long period of time over the last few weeks looking closely at the sales tax data that the city receives. The city's finance department and myself are able to see sales tax data for specific stores, restaurants. It's a confidential item, but we spent a fair amount of time looking at the sales tax data, for example, for very similar retail sites on the Embarcadero. We compared the front Embarcadero side to the bayside of retail against each other, and looked at restaurants and different restaurant setups, organizations, whether it's sort of a bar only or a restaurant with bar or more of a snack bar. So we looked at those things fairly carefully. Comparatively, it's likely not a big surprise, but TOT per square foot is more in the $20 to $27 range for hotel rooms. So a fairly typical retail store on the on the street side of the Embarcadero will generate about $2.40 a square foot of sales tax and revenue to the city. And a fairly typical hotel room on the Embarcadero will generate about $22, $24 of TOT. So it's, in some areas, it's almost 10 times more revenue to the city for TOT by square foot than for sales tax.
It is.
The... So economic benefit, doing a comparison of the sites, Proposal A in its current proposal is 30 rooms, then three different food bar venues totaling about 3,100 square feet between the brewery, the distillery, and the sale bar snack bar on the bayside. From that, we anticipate just over $300,000 a year of TOT and sales tax alone. You recall in the fiscal projection we said $360,000 a year. What this does not include is the minimum rents and the gross proceeds, or the percent gross, since those are going to be fairly similar for all three proposals. Proposal A, if you did Proposal A without any sea cottages or the honeymoon suite, we just ran that to give you some perspective. That means 22 rooms. There's 7 sea cottages in the proposal and a honeymoon suite, so take away 8 of those rooms. That results in 22 rooms. You still have the same 3 food and bar venues, and the city should anticipate about $231,000 a year in TOT and sales tax. Considering the proposals, B and C, or just using B as a comparison here, Proposal B plus the proposed Libertine renovation. So it's important we point out, obviously, if you redevelop just the off-the-hook site like Proposal B suggests, then you would still have the Libertine site producing the TOT and the other revenues that we anticipate from that. So if you combine those two, you have 17 total rooms, 11 from the Libertine and 6 from Proposal B. You have 3 restaurant bar venues at about 4,100 square feet total, 3 retail confection venues totaling about 1,800 square feet, and we would anticipate about $160,000 a year of TOT and sales tax from that. So we just did that as a comparison. B and C are likely, well, they are much closer to each other than A is. So an economic benefit comparison, Proposal A with the sea cottages and the honeymoon suite will generate about 92% more revenue than Proposal B in this comparison. Proposal A without the sea cottages or the waterfront would generate about 44% more revenue. So a brief summary here of the comparison that Scott and I just went through. KNC development has substantially more commercial development experience. The others have either none or not as much. KNC has substantial coastal development experience. The others have no commercial coastal development experience. KNC has substantial hotel development and hotel management experience. The others don't have any. KNC has significantly more financial depth than the other proposers. The KNC proposal is the only one that can combine both lease sites into a single site, and the KNC proposal projects substantially higher revenues to the city's general fund. Scott?
The next section deals with areas of interest and concern related to land use compatibility. That's development standard compliance with the waterfront master plan, parking, and use of the water lease. Next slide. So consistency with the waterfront master plan, the KNC proposal lacks the 10-foot wide bayside lateral access along the entirety of the lease site, and so that would have to be something that was that would be rectified along the water frontage. It doesn't contain the 10-foot second floor setback that would otherwise be required by the waterfront master plan. The view corridor, 30% view corridor requirement, is an issue if you're looking at the two lease sites. If they were able to utilize the street end, which is where this we would potentially be able to come in and get the improvements for the Centennial Parkway project, then they could conform to that requirement. The project needs to better demonstrate a greater than normal public benefit to achieve the 25-foot maximum height limitation. Again, that could be achieved through implementation of the improvements related to the Centennial Parkway at the street end if that were a component of the project. Again, we've mentioned this several times, but it's not uncommon when you're at the consent of landowner phase of the proposal that you have aspects of the project that are inconsistent with current development standards because they didn't have the time through the RFP process to spend going through everything in its entirety, and they didn't go through a permitting process, which is fairly lengthy and fairly rigorous. They went through an RFP process where they put their ideas on paper and gave them to the city. Kind of two different processes that are really not all that related. The next slide deals with parking. As the council is aware, back in June of 2016, you adopted Resolution 5416, recognizing the use of historic parking credits on the Embarcadero. The Libertine and Off the Hook lease sites combined for a total of 137 historic parking credits. This would be something that you'd be utilizing really probably more for the retail component of the development. I think it's probably becomes less applicable to hotel rooms because I think the proposers realize they need to have a place to park their guests. And so they're going to have to come forward, as would any of the proposers, would need to come forward with a plan on how they're going to do that. My guess is that there's going to be some sort of lease agreement that's proposed with the city to utilize existing parking spaces in that area. They may be limited to time. They may not. I don't know because we haven't gotten to that point yet. But any proposal on this site or anyone proposing to do something similarly would have to do that because what we probably don't want is parking spaces or more parking spaces on the waterfront side of the Embarcadero. I think with that, we move on to use of water lease sites, and that's Eric.
Thank you, Scott. So three issues at play here. I'll cover the first two, and I think Dave is going to catch the third. The first issue is are sea cottages or the bridal suite legal, and what are the impacts on slip space? I know the issue of how does the liveaboard ordinance come into play here. The short answer is it really doesn't come into play because this is not residential use of a vessel on the water. Number one, it's not a vessel. Number two, it's not a residential use. So the liveaboard permit really doesn't apply. The liveaboard ordinance really doesn't apply. Liveaboard ordinance applies to residential use of vessels on the bay. So they don't come under the requirement of the liveaboard ordinance. The liveaboard ordinance does have a prohibition of houseboats and other floating structures being used as liveaboard residences, but again, this is not a residence. So my evaluation on the liveaboard legality of it is it's not applicable. What are the impacts on slip space? I guess a couple more items here. Liveaboard uses are not allowed on the T piers. And again, the sea cottages are not live aboard, so we don't think the live aboard ordinance applies here. Slit space, there's about 450 total boats here in the bay. We did a pretty good census back when we did the market analysis for the boatyard last year. 450 boats in the bay. Of those, 190 are in our city slips. We have about 50 in our slips. And the rest are on lease sites and slips on lease sites in Marina Square and various sites up and down the waterfront. We have 125 moorings. Block of 25 belongs to the Yacht Club. Block 25 belongs to Marina Square. The rest are all privately owned. We have half a dozen peppered in there, here and there. We have about 25 boats on our city piers that call our city T-piers home, with a transient population that comes and goes, but we don't count those. And there's about 110 boats back in the State Park Marina. So if we were to use the water area in this lease site and the combined lease sites to do just slips, if you configured them in a non-side tie, in other words, the boats are perpendicular to shore, you'd get about 70, 40-foot slips in there based on width of the fingers in between the slips and sharing common slip areas. You get about 40, about 7 40-foot slips. So adding those 7 slips would increase our slip numbers here about 1.5%. There's about 14 slips here in the planning stages right now, in terms of, I think, Rose's Landing and Harbor Center. But slips, really in small numbers, we hear it pretty universally from our lease site folks. Slips in small numbers, the cost to put it in from the economies of scale, you just don't have it when you put in 4, 5, 6, 7 slips. You have a fair amount of planning and eelgrass mitigation, other costs, and construction as well, and it really doesn't start to pay off until you get into larger numbers. So financially, it's really the rate of return on slips is not good until you start to get into larger numbers.
Okay. So almost to the end here on the economics of slips versus what would be a first-time sea cottage, honeymoon cottage on the water. Couple of notes. First, the city receives no general fund revenue from slips. So there's no sales tax charged on slips. There's no TOT charge on slips, and so there's no revenue that comes to the general fund based on slips. Seven slips, as if instead of the sea cottages, if the investor were to put 7 slips in there, 7 slips would generate about $40,000 of gross annual proceeds, that normally is charged at 10% percent gross. So we would see about $4,000, $4,320 a year to the Harbor Enterprise Fund based on the revenue generated by those slips. And again, nothing to the general fund. If the city were to consider some allowance of sea cottages and honeymoon suite based on the proposal that we've received, has 8 total, the gross annual proceeds from that would be just over $1 million. The 5% percent gross on that would be about $50,000 a year to the Harbor Enterprise Fund. And then the TOT on $1 million would be about $100,000 a year of TOT to the general fund. So the comparison of 7 slips versus 7 sea cottages and a honeymoon cabin, 7 slips would generate $4,300 to the Harbor Enterprise Fund, and the other configuration would generate $151,000 to the city, of which about $100,000 is to the general fund and about $50,000 to the harbor fund. So summary of the proposals. The KNC proposal is a unique response to the RFP. It is unique because the owner of consent of landowner for the Libertine is the only person that could enter into this, provide this unique proposal. So Mr. Caldwell and Mr. King teamed up to provide what is certainly a unique response. It represents the last opportunity in 40 or 50 years to combine these two lease sites into a single site, which, as Eric noted, is consistent with our policy in the harbor lease policy. The site does sit at a critical point in our revitalization link effort along Centennial Parkway. The site provides an investment provides a pretty significant opportunity to pay for perhaps a third of the Centennial Parkway revitalization. The proposal was unanimously and strongly supported by the six-member panel that reviewed it, that again included three staff members and then three residents. It requires a normal effort to maximize public benefit and to ensure the best possible compliance with land use plans. Scott's covered that pretty exhaustively. It provides, without sea cottages, 44%, or with sea cottages, 95% greater revenues than its alternatives. And it compares equally to its alternatives in terms of coverage and view corridor. So with that, again, staff had an initial recommendation in a staff report to grant conditional consent of landowner to KNC Development. To have that consent of landowner conditioned on KNC and staff and the Planning Commission refining the project to ensure compliance with the Waterfront Master Plan and then Centennial Stairway concept. An alternate recommendation that you could consider is, as you did with the aquarium project earlier this year, or about last year actually, is to direct staff to work directly with KNC to refine the project for compliance and then bring a refined project to the council for final consent of landowner. With that, Mr. Mayor, I'll return it to you.
Okay. Back to council. Thanks for that the report. We'll get into questions, following questions, we'll open up for public comment, and following public comment, we'll come back for discussion. We have a few speaker slips here, so are there anybody else who want to speak to this item that hasn't submitted a speaker slip? Seeing none, I think we've got it. I'll start off with a couple questions, and then I'm not going to get through all of them. I'll get through some of my questions and then turn it over to a couple of colleagues on council, and then maybe I'll finish them up if someone else doesn't respond to those. I think I'm going to direct some of my questions towards Mr. Graham. I'm just looking back at when we first went through the Caldwell lease site and we came in to amend that COL with hotel rooms on the upper floor. And at that time, one of my questions was parking. And you covered some of that now, historic parking credits. Mm-hmm. My question was, do we have a parking program to support this proposal?
So, as it stands right now, the council has taken action to recognize historic parking credits. This project would have more parking credits than it needs, but realistically, they're going to need to come to the table with the city to propose something for their guests. Their guests are going to need to park somewhere, and so I envision anybody doing something like this or similarly to this coming to us and asking, is there the ability for them to enter into a parking agreement with the city? For parking spaces, and those might be time-limited type things where they get access to those parking spaces from 5 o'clock in the afternoon until 8 o'clock in the morning, and then, in the interim time, they can be used by anybody if they're vacant. I don't know. I mean, that's something they would need to propose, and we would need to work through. We would be working through that as part of the concept process, so with the Planning Commission, and so it would be public.
Yeah, I guess part of that lead-in question on that was my understanding was based on the consent of landowner, that would task the applicant to work those things out. And mm-hmm. had those things not worked out, then Mr. Caldwell would have reverted back to the initial single-story brewery proposal. So at that time, my understanding was those parking programs were going to be worked out. And so, mm-hmm. So that's that's my understanding of where we were, and now we're looking at combining his with another, and we still haven't answered the question of what a parking program, whether it's valet, whether it's leasing property, which is some of the things you alluded to in the presentation.
I think it's, you know, if consent of landowner was granted to them or direction was given to work with them, we could bring some of the at least preliminary ideas out of that. I think, though, any parking plan that would come out of that should be fully vetted, you know, because I think it's going to be a lot of interest from folks about how that looks and how it functions. But if we want to do that with any of the lease sites down there, I think we're probably, if they want to put hotel rooms upstairs, that we need to come up with a game plan on how to deal with those. And so, I mean, I don't know that it would be different than with anybody else.
Yeah, I guess, well, starting with the first proposal, the Libertine proposal, that was very unique because we haven't had that type of proposal before. All the other boutique hotels have had parking on site, so which was leading to that question. And is there, you know, do we have policy that supports that? Do we have something in there? Which that was something that was going to be worked out in the consent of landowner, which is now we're doubling that in this proposal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can I also just note, so the parking credits, for example, for Off the Hook are 58 historic parking credits, and that has been reaffirmed by the council recently. At the same time, the council said over the next 2 years in the general plan process, 18 months now, we need to look more closely at that. But what that means is that the Off the Hook lease site carries with it 58 parking credits. And so if a proposal for that site was brought to the council where the measurements of the different spaces required 58 or less parking credits, then, or 58 or less parking spaces, then the applicant would not necessarily have to provide parking. And so it's like,
I think the conversation with that was we're talking about parking credits for retail use, not a hotel. And I'll finish up with some of my questions and turn it over because I think we might overlap on some of our questions. And I want to give everybody I don't want to monopolize the question session to get through this as quickly as we can. So maybe we can get back to some of the parking proposals. It seems that was my initial question on that. So the other question I had on this was having feedback for the proposal. In other words, we have the floating hotels, you know, and we have eelgrass issues. And I think with the initial presentation, two of the 6, 8 floating hotel rooms are actually beyond the lease site and into the public area.
Correct. They are.
So, I mean, you know, you see those and you think, okay, well, consent to landowner, you know, but those are – so I'm going to back up just a little bit because this is an interesting way of going through this process since I've been on council. Typically, consent of landowner, we're just talking about consent of landowner, but we've really gotten into the nuts and bolts of these proposals. So, I mean, it kind of lends itself to the nuts and bolts discussion more about the concept than the consent of landowner. I think that needs to be vetted or at least communicated. But, you know, things like eelgrass, you know, there's eelgrass beds out there. You know, there's so many things out there that I know gets worked out in the planning process, even to the point of whether they're floating hotel rooms. Is that the appropriate use based on our waterfront master plan? Is that the type of use that is desired for our bay? And basically, the answer, if I understand it correctly, in previous conversation with you, is there's not anything specifically guiding the applicant to apply for this or not to apply for this. Is that correct?
That's correct. They came forward with what I would say is one of the more unique pieces of the plan. That was something that they'd seen elsewhere and thought would work well here, and I think that's the extent of the thought process that went behind it, although certainly they're here, so they could speak to that more thoroughly.
Okay. I'm going to pause there because I know I'm going to turn it over to Noah to start off on some of the questions, and then we'll work back through John and then Christine.
Okay, thank you. I just have one question, and it's really about looking at alternative pathways forward, and you've laid out a couple of suggested options, and I'm more interested in learning about a pathway that carries this forward, opens up a short but focused window, an opportunity for the three respondents to refine their proposals based on input that they hear tonight, and then also, very importantly, the information that will be presented on the September 27th meeting regarding Centennial Parkway, and how to have a pathway that gives the community and the proposers the opportunity to review and refine if they choose, and then also consider some of the key items that we're probably going to be talking in quite a bit more detail tonight, so that we have better information. So what I'm interested to hear from staff is how would you see a process that included that be structured so that it doesn't become too cumbersome for any of the stakeholders, and does provide the opportunity to refine their proposals and advance them so that they're stronger in the long run, and gives us a better vision about the process forward, and which potential team and proposal has the is the most compliant and the best fit for that area.
I'll start. So, I mean, that's a difficult question because it depends what you're trying, what we're trying to get out of this. You know, an interesting piece of that is what you referenced in relation to the Centennial Parkway plan, right? Makes a lot of sense to have them look at the Centennial Parkway plan if you're looking at KNC's development. Makes a little less sense if you're the other two proposers, because they're at least sight removed from it and don't have any sort of connection to it. And so I don't know that giving them more time to look at that would really do much for them. Nor do I think that they would probably want to, because, again, they're at least sight removed, and we have no way to compel them to do anything with that area. The KNC proposal sort of relies on that area, and we have a direct connection to it, and then could compel them to implement some of the improvements if they were wanting to utilize that for some of the development standards that apply to the project, say view corridors, for example. So if there's other things, though, besides that, which is why you're trying to pull back in the other proposers into us extending this further down the road and looking at it more, I would say the direction would need to be more along the lines of, we'd like a more in-depth dive on compliance review. You know, the RFP process dealt with a lot of folks that don't have anything, don't have a whole lot of knowledge about planning necessarily. Some do. I mean, the chair of the Planning Commission on there, he knew and gave us a write-up that was five or six pages long about it, as an example. But some of the others, not so much. That's not what they were concerned about. They were concerned about the proposals that were in front of them and what they brought forward. And I think that's the way most folks looked at it on the consent of landowner side. Is this proposal make sense? Is this interesting? Is it unique? Does it provide public benefit? Those types of things. And I think it was looked at that level. It's once, and those are the types of things that why you make recommendations on the consent of landowner. It's once we get that, the council says, okay, go work with staff and the planning commission to get your project dialed in for the concept review and precise plan review process. So that was sort of a long-winded response to saying, if that's what you're looking for us to do, the deeper dive and really start doing that analysis piece, then that would be where you would land on with the direction to us to incorporate all of the proposals and keep them moving forward into the future while we do that more in-depth dive. Remember, we don't have an application in front of us for anything, so we're really kind of doing this for free. Whereas once you do consent a landowner and tell someone to come back, they're going to give us an application, we get fees, and to cover the time that's spent by staff. So those are some of the things that go into that.
Yeah, so what I'd like to understand and hear from you is, how do you recommend, if we'd like to extend the competitive component of this and get better detail for the community to understand the proposals and the strengths of each one, and give the proposers the opportunity, if they choose, to refine their plan, how... Give us a little more detail about some of the rough time frame and structure of how you could see that working to limit everyone's expense, really, from the city side, from the proposer side, but heighten the information and ultimately the strength of the project.
So if the direction from the council, at least three of you, was to wrap all of these back into the process and have everybody take another look at them. That's the direction you give. They can choose to do more. They can choose not to. It's entirely up to them because there's a cost associated with that. And you wanted and then you want to give staff the direction to do that deeper dive and do a full compliance review on these, which is not normally what's done at this level. So that would sort of tell them the level of detail they need on their plans so that we can do that. We're probably 4 to 5 months out, is my guess, because I'm going to have to allocate staff time to do that. We did it, you know, preliminarily, you know, going through the process, but it wasn't a full, again, in-depth dive. And the plans, you know, aren't typically developed to that level of specificity to do those types of reviews.
Yeah, I understand that. So I guess what I'll be thinking about and asking you to think about a little more before we get into comments is 4 to 5 months and all the staff time involved with that, to me, seems extreme from the city side. But I think there's a median in there that we have enough citizens, the council itself, that are sensitive to the components of the waterfront master plan to be able to identify generally some of the areas of compliance and some of the areas of concern and not necessarily trigger staff to do all of that extra work, but send the clear message that compliance with the waterfront master plan is a key component of how we're going to select this.
I mean, that's fair. I think what happens in these processes when you go out with an RFP, we might get some inquiries from the applicants, but the window for the RFP preparation is so short that they're really, you know, it's the team that's developing it. They get with their designer, and they're like, this is what we want to do. Here's the waterfront master plan. Go learn it. And then they come out with a plan trying to meet the deadline for a submittal. I mean, that's kind of how these things are put together. And so there's not a whole lot of time for them to, like, come down, sit with us, like, hey, here's our proposal, and then go back and forth. And that doesn't happen just because the timeline's so short. So.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm trying to get at is something that gives them that opportunity to strengthen the proposal and take the experience tonight, the input tonight, and really work towards something that likely for the winning team would be a stronger proposal and save them money in the long term and be worth it, have that some more front-end work, but within reason so we're not being onerous on the requirements anyway. Those are my questions.
Thanks, Noah. John?
Thanks. Thank all of you for your presentation and your insights and information. Very much appreciated. Just a couple of questions. The first question I have is, it's my understanding that we have an identified process for vetting of RFPs that, with regard to these lease sites, that is well spelled out in the RFP document, and could you just review again after consent of landowner the 4 or 5 processes that occur once a project is given consent of landowner?
Well, once it's given consent of landowner, that gives the applicant the okay to go back and sort of come back with their development package for their discretionary approval process, and that's the concept precise plan process. So the concept plan process is a review that goes through Planning Commission with a recommendation to City Council, and then the City Council reviews it. Then you would go from there, and they would go off to the Coastal Commission for their approval of their CDP. The city's review is of a conditional use permit. Coastal Development Permitting Authority along the west side of the Embarcadero is entirely in the Coastal Commission's hands. They go off to the Coastal Commission. They go do their coastal development permitting process. And while they're doing that, they can work on the master lease component of their work on their master lease through the Harbor Department. And then if they get their approvals through Coastal, they would come back and go through our precise plan process, which picks the project, brings it back forward. It could be the same or it could have some changes if it got changed at Coastal, and that would go through the Planning Commission for review and approval, and once they're done with that, then they would go and initiate the building permit process.
So I guess piggybacking on what Councilman Smuckler was asking, is there a hybrid process that you can think of that might not be as onerous as the full process once COL is given that could allow for further refinement of all of the proposals that have been submitted for this project? I mean, is there an intermediate, shorter-term vetting process that might allow them to tune it up, bring it back, and have something that possibly we could look at that was a bit better vetted than what we have now?
Yeah, so you'll notice the staff's recommendation here, or altered staff recommendation, was originally to issue consent of landowner to KNC. And then when we came to the meeting today, we said our suggestion is to direct staff to go work with them and bring the consent of landowner back after we've, you know, done the sort of vetting and, you know, with them specifically, because that was the recommended team to go with from the folks who reviewed the RFPs. It's a little bit different going down the road that Councilmember Smuckler suggested, just because now it brings all of them back into it. And so now you have three moving parts, and really kind of need to have the same folks doing the reviews of each one of those, so you get consistent analysis. You know, I don't want to be handing it to three separate planners and having them go through it. It ends up being sort of, you know, uneven, and I wouldn't want to do that. I'd rather have one person looking at it and going through it. So it's just a different process, and we'd really want to have the council giving specific direction about what they expected us to bring back if we did that.
And is there any precedent for that?
This is not typical. Well, I mean, the precedent in that, not for going back and looking at all of the RFPs. I don't know that we've ever done that, but I haven't been here that long. Eric? No, he's not recalling anything, it looks like. So that's not something we would normally do.
If I may, and the proposers themselves may not want to go through the process if all three have the option of ending up with a C of L, because that's an additional expense to them without really understanding that they may end up with a COL or not. So you would need to, I would suggest, if that's an approach you want to take, that you ask each of the proposers if they're even willing to continue the process if that's how you set it up.
Thank you, Mr. Pannoni. I was trying to understand further how to vet out the comment that my colleague had made, and so that's basically what I was doing. But I appreciate that input very much. My last question is this. In looking at the criteria for the RFP, one of the core issues for me, and I think the community, is the bullet point that speaks to maximization of public benefit of the project and best utilization for both the land and the water component of the site. You've made a very comprehensive presentation. I think I get it, but could you, in a nutshell, give me the short version, the Cliff Note version of why one versus the other project, or KNC, I guess, because that's the one you're recommending, might maximize public benefit to a greater extent than the other projects?
So if the consent of landowner went along with direction to look at, or if the direction was to go work with KNC, we'd want some specific direction about being able to look at the inclusion into the project of the street end. And if that were part of it, the idea here is, so right now, as David referenced earlier, we're going through a planning process right now to develop the Centennial Parkway plan. And there's going to be, in this area, is likely to be some sort of plaza component that could be implemented by the KNC development team if that portion of the project were included into their project. That's a huge benefit and something that really could jump right on the end of on the tail end of us getting that plan approved and then really moving right into construction. Something that we never envisioned before. We just thought, wow, that's fantastic from a timing standpoint that we could potentially get something like that, because internally we're thinking, great, we're going to have this plan that's coming down the road and we have no way to fund any of the improvements, and we know it's likely going to take a public-private partnership that we don't probably have for this portion of it, because as it sits right now, we have Burt Caldwell with his own, you know, already with consent of landowner that didn't do anything really with the plaza necessarily. So this came forward. They wanted to use it. We're like, they want to use that. They need it for a portion of their project. That's a great opportunity. And that's the way we reviewed it You know, from the RFP review team, everybody felt the same way that, wow, that's what a great opportunity and one we should definitely take advantage of if we can. And so that was sort of some of the inner discussions that you had with the RFP team on that specific item. And that's a huge public benefit that we wouldn't otherwise be able to achieve. So,
thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Christine?
Sure, just a few before we open it up to the public. So, thank you for including a lot of my questions from this morning into your presentation. Maybe they weren't just me, but thanks for adding the detail about the boat slips and asking about and recapping very well the history with both sites over the last 3 years. I know I've been on the council. I've seen it, some of the things. I've seen things almost every year from one or the other and sometimes both. So it was good to get the history out for the rest of the public and appreciate the information about the boat slips in great detail. Question I had that a little bit more detail. We talk about just flat out if you're having to describe to somebody who doesn't understand planning and negotiating with investors and new projects is how do you get anyone to contribute to the Centennial Parkway concept? Like why should they? And why would they put any money into something that is a public benefit for that we've created on our own, right? We want to have this great walkway. Why does anybody care?
So in some instances, you know, I mean, this is, hopefully we're going to come back and you're going to review a great plan and we're going to get when we're done with this, we're going to have a fantastic plan that has the Centennial Parkway on it. That's what we're hoping for. That was sort of the direction given and I hope we achieve that. Hopefully we do a good enough job that anybody that has development potential on any side of it looks at it and says, we want to take advantage of this and would want to be involved with that. In some instances, there's going to be the ability to require improvements that are made for portions of it that are adjacent to properties that develop. And in some instances, there's not. It just sort of depends. This was just, again, like an opportunity that came forward. They wanted to utilize that area, and we said, oh, fantastic. We have a way to maybe get a piece of it, and when we didn't think that was going to be something that was going to be coming forward anytime soon. You know, it would also, similarly, how do you get the piece on the other side done? Well, maybe that's through a private-public partnership, too, because maybe we end up with, in the not-too-distant future, some sort of RFP queue that goes out for the Distasio site where we look at redevelopment of that. And a condition of that could be to implement the other piece. You know, that's how you do it. And you develop, you know, terms for the lease of the ground or the purchase of the ground that include those improvements, and that's how you get them constructed because the city doesn't have money for that. We could pursue grant funding for small pieces of it. We probably wouldn't be able to take the whole thing down.
Okay, great. And then going back to the boat slip. So I just had a question about, I know that we have quite a few boats and pleasure craft in the State Park Marina. And I know that in my time on council, we've talked about that marina's maybe degrading in some way or getting silted in. So how many do we think folks have boats in the State Park Marina? And then what's the prognosis for that marina in terms of future use, let's say 10 years down the line or 15 years down the line, in terms of what kind of slips might be needed in the bay on this side?
So I'll field that. So as in the State Park Marina, as I stated earlier, there's about 110 boats in slips in the marina.
Yeah, it's on the plan.
What will happen, we're continuing trying to work with the Corps and with our consultant to try and solve in State Parks to solve that puzzle. If we don't and it continues as it is, it's I don't anticipate it would ever get completely unusable just from boat traffic coming and going. We'll scour to a degree, but it'll get worse and less navigable to some degree. What it really holds back by being that way is anybody coming in willing to invest as a concessionaire to go put a bunch of money into new slips and new electrical and new everything else and the ability to charge a fair market value, a decent rent, to keep people in slips in there. So it'll always be lower revenue generating and limited access, and it'll kind of just muddle along as it is until at some point where it fills in. I don't think it'll ever completely fill in, but it'll just muddle along like that. That's the prospect. I don't think it's ever going to get to the point where the thing's going to completely shut down and everybody just a sudden exodus. It may be the bigger boats slowly disappear over the years, and hopefully we solve it. I'm ever optimistic that we'll get there, but it's certainly a challenge to try and get that dredged out.
Okay, great. Thanks. And then I also wanted to just appreciate the information about any kind of economic discussions we've had in the city about where the a boutique hotel versus another kind of hotel came out, and that was very well explained in the staff report. You spent some time doing that, and then there was a lot of response I see in the questions I had and that came from the public that you were able to respond to them in the staff report. So at this point, I have a ton of comments, but likely everybody else does too, but no more questions.
Okay, with that, we'll move on to public comment. And first one, Madeline Moore, followed by Ron Reisner.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and City Council and staff. I'm the current lease site holder and have been for the year 2016. Actually, I met with you, Mayor Irons. Excuse me. As the night grows on, my voice starts to go with the fog. Having said that, we had met, and I had let you know that I was going to be involved in trying to, I believe, through the vetting out, through my process, that the consent of landlord was tied to the documentation, first with Union Bank and that Central Coast Investment, which is me, purchased and went forward. During that process, and it wasn't vetted out because it would have had to be vetted out with my attorney and with myself, the consent of landlord was removed and subsequently put out for RFP. I participated in this RFP, and I have in past. I spent 20 years of my life in RFP worlds. And this RFP was not a level playing field. Both myself and one of my competitors, Plan B, we had no idea that the consent of landlord that was given to Burt Caldwell, whose lease is identical to my lease site in all aspects and expiration, we had no idea that there was that parameter that we could team up with that, or we would have approached it. And I do feel that, as discussed by someone earlier in the public comment, the interest of the Tidelands, I realize that the city has revenue issues and they want to maximize it. But there are property rights owners and there are moral conditions and there are investments of the people that are there currently on the Embarcadero, whether they've been there a long time or they're more recent as myself. We have money that we've tied up on this in good faith. But having said that, I was absolutely stunned with a 30-room hotel on that site. And I realize that you're going to develop this and refine out this plan, but currently at this time, the realisticness and my understanding of the proposal put forth in both the renderings, our renderings, and the feasibility of 30 rooms, even on the combined sites, it's pretty extreme and probably should be vetted out a little cleaner to make sure that's possible. And it's such a far cry from what Proposal C and B and C say that it would beg the question, is it even possible to do that much? As far as the public benefit, when you talk about you'd have a plaza, my competitor in Proposal B and myself in C, we have a plaza, but we offer other public benefits. We're a little more boutique, we're slower, but the RFP was not a level playing field and was a complete surprise. You talked about Casey or John King having experience in hotels, a little bit smoke and mirrors. We don't have time here tonight to go through why, but one of the hotels in his experience you forgot to mention is the Inn at Morro Bay, the one that he lost in foreclosure. Right now with the county, there are many. These are recorded facts with the county. That's where I got them. There are many right now judgments at the various corporations formed by John King over the many decades that he's been in foreclosure in and that are now delinquent. His financial ability
Maddie,
is in
question.
Maddie,
your 3 minutes has expired. Please, if you can conclude.
You're right. But I'd like you to vet this out a little more seriously.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Ron Reisner, followed by Mark Korkowski.
Good evening, Ron Reisner, Morro Bay. I didn't plan on saying this because I didn't know Noah was going to say what he did, but I'd like to thank Councilman Smuckler for his comments about process, and I support and encourage that approach to this. Regarding this particular agenda item and Proposal A, I offer the following. First, the consent of landowner agreement form referenced in this agenda item states as one of its conditions that, quote, sufficient financial and organizational capacity to fund and complete the project as proposed is evidenced, comma, or proof of sufficient cash reserves are available and to fund the proposed project is evidenced, end quote, which leads to two questions. One, to satisfy these requirements, a complete and realistic project cost projection is necessary, including appropriate contingencies, some of which have been addressed tonight by staff. Has such a project cost projection been made available in support of this agenda item? Two, who, acting for the city and having sufficient specific background and expertise, will judge what is, quote, sufficient, end quote, in terms of the finances? Second, regarding parking, and irrespective of 133 parking credits, where, in fact, will the parking for 30 rooms, approximately 3,000 tenant feet, and all the employees actually go? Third, one of the most precious waterfront commodities in Morro Bay is docking for navigable vessels. There's little enough today, and the demand will only increase in the future. Project Proposal A eliminates docking for navigable vessels and replaces it with moorage for, quote, sea cottages, end quote, floating rooms, end quote. The highest and best use of waterfront space in Morro Bay for these lease sites and the water that extends beyond these lease sites is for navigable vessels, irrespective of any as yet unsubstantiated additional city revenue from sea cottages or other such things. It's worth remembering that existing city ordinance 15.40.030.B pertaining to liveaboard vessels within Morro Bay states that permits will not be granted for vessels for floating structures, houseboats, and so on, and specifically requires that floating structures be designed for safely capable of navigating on ocean waters under their own power. Okay, I heard that they're not homes, but the intent of the ordinance is crystal clear. Additionally, the water in front of these lease sites is State of California trust lands, for which the city of Morro Bay assumed trusteeship in 6465. User policies for those lands state that among the requirements... Wow.
If you can wrap it up quickly...
Well,
I know it's hard to do all this in 3 minutes.
Time is time, so appreciate it.
Ron, thank you.
Forward to the continuing process.
Okay. Mark Korkowski and then Deborah Korkowski.
Good evening. I'm Mark Korkowski. I've been a resident of Morro Bay for quite a long time. I'm concerned over the development of the proposals that have been presented in the RFP process. I think there are some issues with the RFP process, the way it was put out. The responses of Proposal A, B, and C are quite differing for various reasons. I urge the city to take more time to review the benefits of all the responsive RFPs submitted in this development. Conceptual plans are based upon variances that must obtain Coastal Commission approvals. There's a lot on these projects that are going to take a lot of things. And Proposal A, you have everything in Proposal A with no contingencies whatsoever. Where are the contingencies? If they don't do the water plan, what's that do to your income? There's a lot of issues that come along with that. Proposal B doesn't take those in consideration. However, the upside is it could be developed and it could be turned into quite a nice extra revenue package for the city down the road. And Proposal A has both land and water floating hotel planned and must gain Coastal Commission approvals to move forward with these improvements with variances, whereas Proposal B left the development of the marine side as a contingency to improve revenues in future plans, for which allows maximum benefit and most important contingency plan, which no one's addressed tonight. RFP was for one site. And I see now we're doing quite a bit of different things. I think in all fairness to everybody, it should be put back out again. I think it should be very spelled out, be very specific. RFPs are supposed to be that way. You get consistent results that way. And sure, it may cost everybody a lot more money, but we're in a rush because of this 40, 50-year lease plan. Is it really something that we want in Morro Bay? We want a big commercial development on the waterfront with hotel rooms on the bottom floors with no businesses. I like to go down there. I like to sit in that park down there. I think it's quite unique. To take that footprint and narrow it down to put a big hotel down there, I think you should go ahead with proposal B, along with the Caldwell Libertine proposal. It exercises the best benefit to the city in this plan, in this footprint, and it keeps uniqueness of this town together. And I think that's something that everyone's overlooking. It's all revenues. And I understand the staff. The staff has done an exhaustive effort in trying to go through all this. When someone comes up and says, I'm going to give you all this money and we can do all these wonderful things, it's great until all the variances don't get approved and you can't build anything. So you've got a lot of things that are variables and moving parts that it's going to take a lot more time to develop. And I think you should stay in the footprint. I think you should go with Proposal A with a Caldwell Libertine proposal. Put those, or Proposal B with a Caldwell proposal together, and exercise that existing footprint. I think it has a lot more benefit to the public, to the families, to the children that go out there and visit. I like going in Undersea Gallery. I think it's a very unique facility. To lose that in Morro Bay would be detrimental, I think, to everybody. I think that the family activities and the fishing village attributes that that Charisse has brought forward are quite good. So I hope you reconsider everything in the process.
Thanks, Mark. Deborah Krakowski, and then Carol Truesdale.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members, and staff. I'm here on behalf of Charisse Hansen, which is Proposal B. She was unfortunately unable to be here to speak on her behalf, so she's written to me to read to you. What Charisse would like for me to publicly discuss is the benefits of Proposal B that were not included in the staff report. The Proposal B was evaluated using a single building on one lease site compared to a development on two sites. In order to properly evaluate, we must include the current accepted COL development of the neighboring site, the Libertine Pub. Referring to land use only, Proposal B and the Caldwell COL adds 19 boutique hotels, all second story, three retail shops, four to six more food establishments, a playground, an additional view corridor between the two existing buildings, and tons of public access, activities, and historical kiosks. Proposal A adds 22 plus hotels, seven first floor and 15 second store. Both proposals include the Libertine Pub. Overall, the recommended Proposal A is offering three additional hotel rooms in exchange for overall seven businesses. When the numbers are crunched, the city and the owner revenue for land use is greater for Proposal B with Caldwell COL. Note that previously council members requested Caldwell to not partner with the site. Council requested sites to be separate buildings only a few years ago. Proposal B is offering our community, which is extremely important to a lot of us mothers and grandmothers and residents of the city. The two larger retail spaces for Under the Sea Gallery and Memorial Mermaid Boutique, which will be wheelchair access and stroller accessible. There will be a safe, inviting play area with a giant shark jaw archway surrounded by an enclosed seating area. There will be climbing structures of larger-than-life sea otters, sharks, turtles, and seating areas. There will be climbing structures of there'll be four to six coin-operated rides, a giant octopus sandbox with LED lights pulsating down the tentacles, and a vibrant jellyfish steps that light up when pounced upon. Adjacent to the playground will be yogurt shops, a perfect place for locals and guests to visit all times of the day and year. There will be an open-air food courtyard for public with traditional tables and lounge furniture both inside and out. There will be four to six specialized food vendors inside and out, wraparound bar. The entrance to the courtyard will be an attractive plexiglass dome that surges water, mimicking an ocean wave, similar to the one at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. Along the water will be a public access platform equipped with viewing scopes, ecological and history place cards. One of the scopes will be a reverse periscope that gives a 360-degree view of our underwater environment. Attached will be a feeding tube so pellets can be set down, allowing observers to catch the sea creatures in their natural habitat. With that said, I think it needs to be more geared to family and children rather than honeymooners and hotel guests.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Carol Truesdale. And George League.
Mr. Buckingham. I must state that Proposal A from KC Development LLC, that includes John King Ventures, is quite interesting. I have a few questions. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
That is
all
better.
All right, is that better?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Floating bedrooms on the Morro Bay, how are the wildlife and marine life impacted by such structures? What studies have been conducted to ensure their safety? These floating bedrooms are occupying part of the West Coast's largest estuary waterways, and I do not believe that we should be building structures in this estuary. This sets a very dangerous precedent for the future of the Morro Bay waterways. Are the figures quoted or proposed of $3.6 million revenue to the city over a 10-year span, which equates to $360K per annum? That includes $300K TOT based on 100% occupancy. Was it for 360 days per year, or was there another criteria utilized to come up with this figure? I question the legitimacy of these proposed figures. And there's no visibility of lost revenue during construction. There's no visibility as to how this construction will negatively impact other businesses and tourism among the Embarcadero during this time. And was any consideration given towards existing motel hotels that are currently established within Morro Bay proper? Does this potential development impact current motel industries that are already established within the city of Morro Bay, who are already competing for occupancy dollars so they remain stable and profitable? And finally, I have great concerns about the integrity of the proposed investment partner based on history and documentation that I presented to council tonight. And the potential backfire that could possibly harm the city of Morro Bay. Webster defines backfire as to have the opposite result of what was desired or expected. Thank you.
George League. Travis League, coming up.
George League, Morro Bay. Well, I think my thunder has all been taken away from me here. These people have pretty much put it right on the head. They've done a good job of speaking on this. And the other thing I look at, it reminds me of a Bible story about David facing Goliath here. And you know how that worked out. So, anyway, and there's been questioning a little bit about the experience that we've had. The League families had more experience of developing on the Embarcadero than any other family. And I think we've done a pretty good job. And Charisse and Travis, they're extension of the new generation. And they got the energy, they got the vision, and they will have the resources. There's no problem about that. We'll raise that for them. So I really like their project. I don't know why we would even think about putting such a large, bulky project down there. When I was on the council and with Noah, I had to step down, of course, but they agreed to not put these things together, but to keep them separate and keep them small. And that's part of the uniqueness of Morro Bay. We're taking away, you know, the unique part of Morro Bay, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, if these bedrooms on the water and everything make so much money, maybe we ought to tear up all the boat slips and put in bedrooms. I don't know. That's ridiculous. You know, you're never going to get this thing through. You know, the Coastal Commission is going to shoot this down one anyway. And you're talking about people here that have dealt with Coastal Commission. God. This I can't believe this. Anyway, I'm having a bout with vertigo, so I'm probably stumbling around here a little bit. And so I just wanted to say I think these people have made a really good point. So thank you anyway.
Travis League. And then Tina Metzger. Dana, did we get the information from Carol Truesdale? You've got it? Okay. We haven't seen that. Okay. Thanks, Travis. Go ahead.
Hi. Travis here, representing TLC Family Enterprises. Again, I don't know what else I can say than what has already been brought up by members here tonight. I guess I'll touch on the fact that Therese and I have put our heart and soul into the project that we have proposed. We've been down there for 17 years, seeing the comings and goings of different people and what they're hoping for. We developed a project based on that, and based on the RFP, we followed it to a T. We have no issues, relatively minimal issues with Coastal, if any. The permit process should go relatively quickly for us, and we'll be ready to hit the ground running March 2018, dozers on site, ready to go. It says that we have no experience. I've built quite a few projects, residential albeit, but still pounding nails, putting up walls, and you know, finishing the project. Experience, yeah, John King and Caldwell definitely have that on us. We have the resources. We have everything we need to make this project work. To allude to some of the numbers that were presented tonight, inaccurate in a lot of ways. I submitted something to council today. You can take a look at those, and those are at the bottom. I state there that those are all square foot revenues that I can substantiate with my own numbers from Great American Fish Company, from the Harbor Hut, and from the Under the Sea Gallery. $2.40 a foot, I believe, is what you mentioned for income generated by a retail store to the city. Therese and I produce over 15, so about 700% difference, and we are going to be the ones running it, so I think that should have some credibility. As far as a subtenant running the hotel, that's inaccurate. We are going to be there every day. This is our baby. We will be running this project and continually be there daily. Again, as I said, in looking at Burt Caldwell's existing COL, putting those two projects together, public benefit is maximized. The hotel rooms, you mentioned that there was only six. We actually have 6 to 8 in plans, and 8 actually is what we're shooting for. So there's 19 rooms collectively between the two projects. All the retail space, all the restaurant space, which, again, those numbers were slightly skewed. If you look at the numbers I provide, they are accurate and show that our floor plan on the land use side of things, which should have no problem being approved by Coastal, and since they both have been conceptually approved by the city, we should have no problem putting those together and developing them. And those numbers, again, are substantiated. And what they've got going right now is grandiose. It's a great idea. I love it. I just don't see it happening the way they have it planned. And I believe that there will be a truncated version, ultimately, of what they are proposing, and a lot less revenue generated than is being suggested. I believe that our project, in the end, will ultimately produce more revenue. And, again, it's strictly adhered to the RFP and what was proposed. God, what else? On a closing note, well, that was it.
Thanks, Travis. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Tina Metzger. Okay. We don't have any more speaker slips for this item. With that, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. Thanks, everybody, for speaking and coming out on this issue. And I'll turn it over. Christine, you want to start us off for comments?
If you just allow me for 10 seconds to put my notes in order, I would appreciate it. Okay. Made lots of notes while everyone was speaking, staff and public, so if you have a little patience with me if I have to go back and forth, I appreciate it. I thank you in advance. So Mr. Graham made a great comment that resonated with me, and he didn't mean to. It was a question you asked, and I think this is the question that I would ask all of us involved, and is, what are we trying to get out of this project? So, you know, you said that, and it's exactly right. That is what all of us are thinking. What are we trying to get out of this? This has been proposed as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in many ways, and we've heard about that tonight. So what I think, as my responsibility as council member, what do I think, my two cents, what are we trying to get out of this project for the community? All I could, simple answer is a balanced project, because that's what we are charged to do as folks who keep watch over the Tidelands Trust. So those are state lands that we manage, administrate for all of us as Californians. So what's a balanced project mean then? A balanced project to me, and this is my order, but it may be different order, and some of them really are maybe 1A, B and C, but I have one. What's a balanced project? The public benefit that we are bringing to the Tidelands. That's what we have to consider. It's different there. It isn't like an empty space elsewhere. It's unique. It makes it difficult. It makes it challenging. It can be exciting. But it's basically a very unique situation that doesn't exist in other parts of the county or other parts of even the city of Morro Bay. So it's a public benefit. Has to come from use of anything in the Tidelands. And then number two, from my perspective, is what's the return on investment for the city? So obviously, if we're putting something on the Tidelands, are we having a benefit for the city that then again reaches more people and brings greater benefit to the city as a whole? And then third, it has to be a viable project for the investor. And I completely realize that in order for us to have a good return on investment, in order for the public to have a benefit that they actually might like on the Tidelands, then the project has to be viable for the investor because the public money is rarely going into these types of projects. So then that said, looking at what we have coming up in just 2 weeks, I was thinking, you know, we really want the community to love the Centennial Parkway project. We want to love it. Doesn't mean we're not going to tweak it. Doesn't mean that we're not going to adjust things, but we want to love that project ultimately. And we have exciting ideas coming forward that I have not seen, the public hasn't seen, no one else on council has seen. So what is that going to look like, and how are we going to feel when we see those proposals? Because many of you in this room have given your input on that. We've been talking about it a year and a half. It's something that's been dreamed about for a decade or more in the city. So for me, I would prefer a different process. I am aligned with what we're hearing from Councilmember Smuckler earlier this evening, kicking off the questions, but I would prefer a different process by which we are entering into this historic public discussion. So if we're talking about a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to create a pathway, potentially it could mean a combination of two lease sites. That's something that may or may not come out of what we see in 2 weeks from the Centennial Parkway project. But I feel like that would be a process. I'd like to have the opportunity to take a look at that and have all the respondents take a look at that prior, especially Mr. Caldwell, whose project, previous project, currently proposed project, is smack dab against right next to the project coming down from the Centennial staircase. So I feel like I'd like to have that out in the public and then kind of take a look at that and see, well, how does it compare then to what we've seen tonight? And how does specifically it relate to the lease site where the current Libertine is? So I'm keeping an open mind about, at this point, any lease site combination. However, I have to go back to what I did say on June 11, 2013, council meeting, and I did go back and I reviewed our discussion about the lease site combining that came up previously with taking off the hook and taking Libertine and combining them. And three of us on this current council were also on the council then. And we did discuss the fact, as Mr. Endersby properly pointed out, that it was a joint partnership that made us uncomfortable and ultimately wasn't perhaps the way to go. But in our comments, we also did say, you know, we kind of like the idea of two separate sites. And it was something that we got feedback from the community at that point, too, and said, yeah, let's move forward with two separate sites. You know, that's been echoed before in different ways. And I even recall the project that came forward with Mr. Caldwell prior to that, where the idea was maybe not to even have the second floor. And, you know, all these things have come forward. And specifically about the off-the-hook site, we recently talked about a lot about that site from January, February through April, and worked on different options there with the current folks that were asking us to extend a little time to see if things could be put together. And in every case, when either we're talking about the off the hook or Libertine, this council and the previous council that I've been on, my opinion is we've been respecting the investment of the private sector in the fact that we've been keeping open minds to what's possible on the lease sites, in particular these two. We've worked with folks, given extension of time, been amenable to a lot of the different ideas as long as they come back to that balanced project, which in my mind is public benefit, return on investment, and then, you know, a viable project. So I think that we've been recognizing and respecting what it takes to bring good projects to the city, and that many cases, well, in every case, it's partnership. The unique thing about the aquarium I wanted to point out while we're here is talking about how we moved forward with the aquarium a year and a half ago, perhaps a year. You know, with the aquarium, our decision, my thought process on that was there's really no one else in our county that could deliver that partnership for us. They're the Central Coast Aquarium. There's no one else doing the quality aquarium that they're doing. And they're partnering with Cal Poly. So there's no one else that could bring that to that project. That was absolutely unique in that way. So it's a good example for us to look at, but just to refine a little bit about why we did say, you know, go ahead and move forward, consent of landowner with the aquarium, is because there's really no other options. There's no one else who can do that. You know, there are other options for hotels, there are other options for retail, other options for restaurant. But I wanted to just clarify that the direction on the aquarium was because of the unique partners that just weren't going to come from anywhere else. The parking management is something that I think all residents are concerned about, and likely so would be potential visitors. Folks get frustrated trucking down their automobile, and it likely we're going to see more hotels being proposed on second stories, and we probably really do need to have a clear-eyed vision of what that means and what our options would be. So I do think there is an ongoing question mark about the parking. Getting through this page, you're probably seeing, oh my gosh, she has a whole other page of notes. Thanks for your patience. We are in the early stages of this conversation we're having with the community and our potential investors. We're very early on. So when we sent this out for RFP, there wasn't a way, and I want to state this very clearly to everyone who was involved in the RFP process, there was no way for the council or staff to know that there would be such a hybrid response where Mr. Caldwell would team up with someone else, which again is unique and only he can do because he has the consent of landowner on the neighboring property. So it was likely a surprise to many of us that this opportunity was there, but it was a legitimate opportunity from his point of view. The city likely couldn't have figured that out in advance because there had been a previous partnership proposed in 2013 that wasn't supported at the time by the city. So it wasn't anything I expected to see. Does that mean that it will never work? Again, my mind is open on that. But going back to what I said, I'd like us to have a look at the Centennial Parkway proposals to then have a full picture of what that particular area could look like. And we're only waiting until September 27 to see that. So I don't think it's extending it too long, at least in that way. Okay, getting there. Oh, and finally, I want to thank all responders for their time to present to us. And I know it's time and money, and I know that you've come up with to all of your projects in one way or another have received criticism here or there or from different areas, and I know that that's can be difficult because you all really believe in your projects. I do think specifically on the Caldwell King project that it's creative, no doubt, a bit of a stretch mentally, I think, for our community and, you know, likely permitting agencies too, because we just haven't seen that here yet. And, you know, not that you shouldn't have proposed it. I mean, you can't help but get a creative idea and share it. But I think the balance between the uses of the waterfront for navigable craft and allowing that, it's difficult for me to anticipate that we would remove that use at this point. Saying that, it may be that therefore then this project is not very viable, which was my number three item under balanced project. So if we're saying here tonight, and I think we might want to weigh in on how we feel about the sea cottages, that may change the way you look at the project too, but to be fair, that isn't something that I was able to prepare for. We have a lot of questions about eelgrass and structure and how it would actually happen. So I think that was a great outside-the-box opportunity, but I'm not sure that at this point, we're in the position in Morro Bay where we have so many people who absolutely love to be on the water, and having a boat, I mean, all you have to do is come to one of our code enforcement discussions and you realize how important people's boats are to them in Morro Bay. So it's something that we as a council have to look at the whole city and have to take that very seriously and figure out how we would make up for those lost slips, even though the finances clearly, you know, we're not going to make money on that, but it is a service. And again, we're in the Tidelands Trust and we're in public land. So that's something that as your council, we are responsible for balancing. And two final comments. I totally understand why staff has given us the staff report that they have. You know, I understand there are criticisms again of the report in different places, but I understand they're looking at the whole city from a particular perspective. I understand how they've approached it, and their recommendation is that, and I think they've spent three of our staff members have spent a lot of time and expertise on telling us, they're giving us their expert opinion. So I respect that and I appreciate that. And then I guess part of it is, you know, sometimes that the council has a role that balances that out too. So they're you know, three entities that make these decisions. It's the public, the council, and the staff. And finding a way to work together is really where the best decision comes from. So getting back to what do I think we should do moving forward is, I would agree with a waterfront master plan compliance check, not the deep dive that would take 4 to 5 months, but if we had talked about focusing on the waterfront master plan. And then I would like a further question, and we can ask this later. I don't know if anybody else has this question, but I'm wondering, the way the RFP was written and then one of the responses, I'm asking the city attorney, that's just kind of that just happens in out there in the world of RFPs, if someone has something that no one else has, like in this case, Mr. Caldwell has his own unique consent of landowner right next door to the property that was RFP'd. Is that just the way it goes? And, you know, or is there anything the city could be at risk for because we've sent out an RFP for one thing and then we're considering a response for something that's different?
I don't think there's anything in the RFP that legally prohibits the city council from reviewing any of the proposals.
Or taking action on any of them.
Correct.
Okay. So I guess what I'd, to wrap up then, would like a little extended time for this process, have more conversation with the public, and then find out what is the appropriate level of staff and respondents to have to clarify some questions council has tonight. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. John?
Thank you, and thank you, Christine, for your comments. I will try not to repeat too many of them, but I may echo some of them because they were quite good. What catches me is really this notion of public benefit, and I am really, if you look at the second bullet point in the RFP, it really speaks to maximization of public benefit of the project for the best utilization not only on land but in water. And Mr. Reisner's comments resonated significantly with me in terms of just the issue and notion of our first and best use of our waters. We're unique. We are a harbor. There's not much of this type of opportunity left in California. And I personally wonder about the viability of the floating vessels, although they're intriguing to me and certainly economically beneficial to the community if indeed we were able to move those forward, or they were able to be moved forward through coastal, etc. But it does, in my mind, take away possibly from the public's notion of what the best use of our waters should be. And that raises an issue for me. Second, I'll echo what Christine said. Many of you may be hearing Centennial Parkway development for the first time. We have been speaking about it, and there have been a couple of workshops, but we haven't seen the overall presentation yet with council at the council level. And I do want to say that I think that one of the important aspects of a combined, integrated a lease project is what it might contribute to the city with regard to city benefit for public use spaces and public development. And that hasn't been thoroughly vetted out in my mind in terms of understanding what the contribution might be, although if that's economically viable, could Project B or C also, in conjunction with the existing approved project for Mr. Caldwell, could we achieve the same outcome by combining requests for participation in the city public development by those two different entities, or are we limited to the unique combination of a single lessee for the development of the project? And I'm not quite clear how that all fits together, or if indeed there is or will be a significant benefit achieved from one project or the other with regard to that. And so that's unclear in my mind. And I guess the second big issue is really economic benefit to the community because of the financial situation with the city. I'm not going to belabor the issue. Our budget is balanced, but our reserves are minimal to none. And in the future, those reserves must be built up over time. And so anything that maximizes the economic return to the city in conjunction with the other components of an RFP, public benefit, as I've described, preservation of the ecosystem, et cetera, I think have to be considered as most opportune. And it appears to me that possibly Project A has some advantages in that, although if the flotillas do not get approved, I don't know if that advantage is significant. But the economics of it are an important consideration, and the key to the economics may well be the contribution to the city by the lessee or lessees that would contribute to the public development, in my mind. Lastly, I would comment also on the notion of this project that has been recommended, Project A. It is unique, it is different for Morro Bay, but it might have significant tourist attractivity, if that's a word. If not, I made it up. But attraction for tourism and maximizing TOT and or, again, economic dollars is extremely important. And the uniqueness of the project, if it were viable after being fully vetted, is something that I believe could possibly be advantageous in attracting visitors to this community. I do believe that higher-end hotel rooms, a certain number, are desirable here. We do have a significant number of hotels. We're not at maximum occupancy, but we're not talking about just physically adding more hotel rooms. We're talking about the type of room available that will attract possibly a different tourist that would not possibly consider Morro Bay, and I'm not putting down any of our existing hoteliers. That's not my point. My point is that at times higher-end hotels are desired by individuals that have higher disposable incomes, and we want those dollars to flow to Morro Bay. So there could be some advantages there economically for the city. The conclusion that I come to was the genesis of it came from Mr. Smuckler again, and we'll point fingers at him, and that's this hybrid approach to really looking at this issue. I don't expect, and thank you, Mr. Pannoni, for your words, the applicants to go through the full process of coastal determination, sitting down with staff, spending a lot of time trying to understand everything that we possibly could know about the project. We couldn't do that to staff. They don't have the time. We don't have the resources to do that, et cetera. Nor do I think that you as the potential lessees would want to do that. But I do think the key, and I think Christine maybe said it, was that I need to understand the Centennial Parkway integration opportunity, and I believe that's a key to the potential vision for the type of lessee that we would want to attract to this project, including consideration of all of the issues that were mentioned, parking, sidewalks, view shed. I won't go into those details. Those get vetted later, but they're all important. So from a timing standpoint, I don't want to feel rushed. I do want to hear the full proposal for the Centennial Parkway plan before I would feel comfortable making a decision. Thank you.
Thanks, John. No?
Yes, thank you. And I just want to start with a couple of comments, just because I think they're important to say, and then get into what I think would be a good step forward. So one is, as has been identified, is there are strengths and weaknesses with all of these proposals, and I think that's to be expected for an RFP and a competitive process, and I think that's the strength of a competitive process. I would agree with your comments and the idea of trying to extend the process within reason to take advantage of that and provide a better understanding of what is proposed and improved, stronger proposals in general. I do want to say to Mr. Caldwell that I still very much appreciate your current consent of landowner project, and just wanted to say that tonight, because I think that's an important component to any way we go forward. You, I think, know some of the different things that attract me particularly to that project. I am very concerned about the boatlet concept, and I understand your interest in that, and I just from talking with different people on the Embarcadero, leaseholders on the Embarcadero, would see the floodgates basically open wide if we were to allow anything like that at this point without a policy. And in fact, I'm more inclined to agree with Mr. Reisner that that is certainly not the intent of our slips and our waterfront leases, and that is more for focused on the navigable vessels. So personally, I'm not sure I could approve any project or concept that included that, and I'm not sure if we want to make that statement tonight. I would encourage us to do that just because of the precedent that sets and where that takes the potential project. And I think it ultimately would undermine the ability of that project to be implemented. I don't see that getting approved through Coastal. That's my perspective. But a couple last things here before I get into maybe a recommendation of what we could do after Mayor Irons makes his comments. But I think to just recognize what staff was coming, their perspective that they're coming from on the recommendation and the way they reviewed this. We have quite a bit of a need on the Embarcadero and the waterfront in general for improved infrastructure. And these sort of funds and revenue streams are exactly how we are going to achieve those improvements. And we've been working really hard to try to put us in a better position to invest and to improve our infrastructure overall within the Embarcadero and throughout town. And so I see where staff is coming from. It comes across as being too focused on the economic side and not enough on the soul or the intent of what the Waterfront Master Plan is trying to do with the character and so forth. But I think it's important to recognize that and understand why you're so focused on trying to catch up with our infrastructure deficit that we have and that we're trying to fix. Just generally, this area is very important and complicated and has a lot of opportunity. So I'm comfortable with taking some more time for us all to understand better the future of Centennial Parkway and make sure that this area, which is really the hub for the commercial district on the waterfront and key to connecting to the downtown, gets the attention and time and consideration it deserves. And I will just end my comments with what I think would be perhaps a motion that I'll just kind of lay out there, if that's okay. I'm not going to make the motion, but to kick off some conversation. And my suggestion would be that we receive all three proposals and extend the review period. I'm just going to throw out October 25th. That's just kind of an arbitrary council meeting date that I want to put as a placeholder, that maybe, to the October 25th council meeting to allow for the proposals to receive refinements that include but are not limited to more detail related to the number one, conformance with the waterfront master plan, context with the Centennial Parkway concept. Number three would be the parking plan for the proposal. Four was public benefits. Five was environmental stewardship initiatives. And then six was the economic viability. And those last three are kind of, they're probably not needed. It's obvious. But that's generally what I was starting to work towards as far as a recommendation. I'm totally open to suggestions from staff and from council on how to refine that. I also think Coastal Commission would be very cautious about commenting too much on proposals at this early phase. But as we've tried to do and set the standard of reach out to them when we have these sort of complex situations in front of us and at least give them the chance to provide a little bit of insight and perspective from their end. We've seen that go a long way towards ultimately them approving and supporting these projects. So that's the end of my comments.
Okay, great. Thanks, everybody, for your comments. And I'll echo all of them and just add to some of the comments as well. First, I just want to thank the applicants for their work and their time in their proposals. Noah, it was nice to echo the appreciation of Mr. Caldwell's initial project, which, I would echo as well. I'll just go down through a few things. I might jump around, but I'll respond to the Sea Cottage as well. I think you were asking whether or not how we want to go with that. And, first, very innovative project, very creative. It is a hub there, as it's been identified. All the conversation about Centennial Plaza, reviewing that, I think is important for us to be able to, and the community to be able to see. I think it'll really tie things together and add some more knowledge on what's going on there. Some of the comments of what do we want? I think what we want has been crafted in our waterfront master plan. So that's kind of there. What we've led ourselves into is the concept of the, and it's not new. We've done the cottage hotels that we have on the waterfront now. What was new was the cottage hotel, but, what do we do with the parking program? One of my initial comments on that was, how is it going to get through the process? How is the Coastal Commission going to support something like that if we don't have some sort of parking program in place? And I understand, and as I was thinking about that, I was thinking, well, we went through Marina Square. Marina Square, the biggest, project that has been built. I can't recollect that. I mean, I do remember when it was built, but I don't recollect, all the ins and outs of that. But I imagine there was a lot of discussion on a project of that magnitude with the community, yet we got through it. So I appreciate the taking time and with the suggestions, Noah, you've laid out. But looking at the specific proposal A, when I look at that, there are some things missing, and that is what we have on the waterfront is the Tidelands Trust that we are responsible for. So to create something that is more of a resort that doesn't have that public access element, I think we're squeezing ourselves out. And you know, the attraction of Morro Bay is the experience and not necessarily the resort in of itself. So, you know, the navigable vessels being there, you know, I think is pertinent. Sure, the economics, you know, we want to be able to grow some economics, but, you know, let's face it, you know, maybe there's just, you know, limits that we have within in the bay. So, though it's creative and I can visualize the sea cottages, if we were to go through a policy thing, would have to be vetted through a Harbor Advisory Board and Planning Commission to more detail with the community on what we wanted. But from, you know, my standpoint and the position to ask was, you know, do we think that that's really where we want to go? And I don't think so. I think what it does is it puts our visitor, you know, on the water, and, you know, it's not that we don't – that's the part where Councilmember Johnson was talking about balance. We have people that, you know, like all of us that live here, we want to have that good experience, and we have our visitors. And, you know, that's the balance on how we do that. So I don't see the sea cottages as a part of that. And I believe that, you know, the heritage of navigable vessels down there, I think, is more in keeping of what we have in the bay. But, you know, I did speak about the eelgrass as well. You know, if the bay is such an attraction for all of us, residents and tourists alike, we have to ensure that it's healthy, and that's one component that is. So we don't know what would be uncovered. So, you know, obviously the proposal with whether or not it has slips or sea cottages, that has to be evaluated as well. But, you know, I think we need to be able to, and I think the Coastal Commission has made it really clear that we have to have a priority on that, and I would agree because it's integral in how the health of the bay is. I'd like to thank the six people that sat in on the approval process. I know that they went through that, and so, you know, granted it was a new concept, we, you know, went out with one RFP. You know, the opportunity presented itself. This came forward the way it did. You know, just creative. Collaborative work, but at this point, I'm pleased that the council wants to have a little bit more time under some of the recommendations, Noah, that you crafted up, and it's a unique, you know, when we think about that particular area, we've looked at a convention center down there at one point. And it seems to get a lot of attraction and a lot of interest. So, you know, whether or not it comes back with proposals that are two separate lease sites or combined, I'm open to that as well. You know, I think the key will be able to look at the Centennial Plaza. But we, you know, I think we need to take the time to get it right. So I appreciate everybody's comments. And Noah, I'll look towards you. You had... had some guidance in a motion, and unless there's other comments, we could go for a motion at this point.
Yeah, I think I'd like to ask staff what your thoughts are about that motion and process forward, specifically the October 25th date.
Probably the only clarification I would want from the council would be, what do you expect me to bring back? You know,
I've got some things.
You gave us kind of direction about like what you want to see, but what is the form? I mean, we're gonna come back on the 25th of October. What do you want from us? I mean, do you want us to bring back the?
Fair
I
question.
Mean, you said we don't want a full deep dive on it. Okay, we can do that. We can do kind of conformance review. That's not a problem. and we can interact with the applicants mm-hmm. or with the proposers mm-hmm. to get that sort of level of detail and input back from staff. So all on equal footing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's what we want to be, right? Fair. And they then can do what they want with that information
yep.
and return something to us or not. What type of evaluation in the form of the staff report that we're bringing back to you do you want from us? Do you just want the facts that, you know, what we have coming back, what's been proposed, what are the changes, what's the differences? Do you want recommendations?
I'll take the facts at this point. Mm-hmm. I'd like the okay. facts. I think what you just said was really good. I have confidence that we can work through which of these would be the best and strongest proposal out of that. And if we need to take action, I think we'll know how to do that. What you laid out there as far as giving the applicants fair and equal footing on access to you for some high-level compliance review mm-hmm. is important because we want to respect their time and effort in this and help guide each one to be the strongest proposal it can be because mm-hmm. ultimately that's going to be the best final option for us. Mm-hmm. And just kind of curious to know if you think the October 25th date is realistic.
So I'm going to give you what's going on right now. I have two GPAC. We have an extra GPAC meeting this month. So we have one Thursday and another one on the 29th, and then we have one of the general plan related workshop in October. So we have a lot of things kind of running through my department right now that are going to take resources, and I'm a little concerned about being able to give you something that's worthwhile and worth review that in that short time frame.
That's very understandable.
Okay.
I echo that and say a little later is wiser.
Okay. And maybe a little bit better for the applicants, and I think one of the earlier questions was do we want to ask the applicants if they want to participate at this point? I think, Mr. Pannone, you were asking that.
That was when it seemed like we were going to be getting more in depth in review. If they want to participate, they will.
Okay.
The only other comment I'd like to say regarding timing, if I understood, what you want to do is have the Centennial Park plan come before you first. I'm guessing that between the 27th of September and the 25th of October is probably not enough time for both
yeah.
them to be able to go yep. think again and then bring something back to you.
Yeah. That's perfectly reasonable. Help us balance the extension of time here. We know that this lease mm-hmm. has been coming close to expiration for quite a while, but I think we all see the importance of doing this right and figuring out how to extend the time if necessary to make sure that this stays fresh and current and not too far out, but to not limit the ability for the applicants to make refinements if they choose to and to give us a chance to review that and staff to work with the applicants. So you want to think about a date that makes sense?
I mean, the working with the applicant part isn't going to take all that long. If we're just going to do sort of a cursory review, that's fairly quick. I mean, we're going to do that in a couple of weeks. We can do that while we're waiting to get to the next council meeting where we're going to review the Centennial Parkway plan. I mean, probably by the time we get there, we'll be able to give them at least the input they need to make decisions moving forward, whether they want to change things or not, and then they'll be ready to go. Then they should probably be prepared to attend that meeting to see what the plans look like. And then they'll have to make decisions, you know, beyond that, whether they're going to make changes or not.
If I can just add on that, you know, perhaps not having a date certain is the best approach. Because we're intending to bring you the Centennial Parkway plan, not plan, two concepts in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to look at those two concepts after the HAB does and the PC, after you look at them with the HAB and the PC, and there's been plenty of public input already. You're going to get more public input. And then you're going to give us direction on those two concepts. And then the contractor is going to go back and take that direction and put together the concept. That's going to take time in itself, likely 4 weeks at least. So if what we really want to do is know what the Centennial Parkway concept plan looks like so that that can inform the applicants, then late October is way too early.
Yeah.
And recommend that you tell us date uncertain as soon as we can bring it back to you, and we'll make that happen. Otherwise, you'll have applicants who are trying to do something based on having seen two concepts and heard some council input about those concepts and have input and PC input, but not sure exactly what it's going to look like at the end.
Yeah, good points.
John, you had a question?
Not a question, maybe a comment of clarification, and it may be more for applicants than staff, or maybe both, but I think there's consensus for the following points. One, we're interested in understanding the integration of any project with the Centennial Parkway and the financial implications of that as much as we possibly can after the presentation. That's one. Two, I think we've said that the public benefit with regard to the water access and the waterway needs to be vetted against the existing master plan for that and consistent with that. And there was question marks about one of the proposals and the viability of the floating rooms. And then third was the notion of, in my mind, possibly trying to understand how to get further public input, because we'll have a couple of meetings and we'll have this presentation, but it'd be great to hear from a larger group of people. Now, I don't necessarily think that you can schedule a lot more meetings because your plate is so full, but I mean, that's what we're all talking about, is really trying to get as much public input as possible. So I just would add that as a possibility.
If I may, Mr. Mayor, with regard to the integration with Centennial Park, from a legal perspective, I don't think we're as limited as we typically are with a development where you have to have a nexus connection, because you're making a business deal. So it's going to come down to how much participation do you want and how much can they afford to make sure that it's still a viable project.
Thank you, Mr. Boney. Yes.
Christine?
Well, I think it'll probably work itself out now, but I think it echoes a little bit what Councilmember Heading said, but just when we were talking about what report would come back from staff, I think it would absolutely have to include any details on how any of the proposers would work with the ultimate choice that you know, the community makes about Centennial Parkway. That wasn't specifically said, but probably goes without saying, but I would want to know what that entailed and what were they willing to do. That's all.
And before you...
And did you want to give direction on the sea cottages or not?
Yeah, I was just going to... I had a couple comments on that. The parking program, you know, we talked about, I think Noah had that in his comments, working out something there. The floating hotel rooms, I'm sensing that there's no support for that. And then I had one comment on the Harbor Walk based on the Proposal A and one diagonal room down that dissected the Harbor Walk. You know, I think if the Centennial Plaza is kind of that key, then we ought to be able to, per our waterfront master plan, continue that Harbor Walk to the left or to the right. And there again, I think that part of it should be, you know, for public access. And as far as integrating any kind of type of hotel room in there, I would be leery of. I think that's the direction. Unless there's some other comments on that, I would pull back from that and keep the Harbor Walk there and keep everything on the inland side. Those are my comments on direction, if we're good there. Are there any other comments?
I would agree with you about the boat
the motels, and I think the applicant or the proposer can take that from our conversation tonight. Yep. I don't know if we necessarily have to make that motion.
Yep. Yeah, I just, yep, yep, okay. All
so
right,
I think, I mean, it'd be great to do the motion and see if we can close it.
So I'll make a motion that we receive all three proposals and extend the review period to allow for optional refinements, including but not limited to more detail on, number one, conformance with the waterfront master plan, two, context with the Centennial Parkway concept, three, parking plan, four, public benefit and access, five, environmental stewardship, and six, economic viability.
Second.
Mr. Mayor, the only thing I would suggest is with regard to the Centennial Park, it's not just a connection, but actual financial participation.
Yes.
Participation.
Commitment, yes.
So we have a motion by Mr. Smuckler, second by Ms. Johnson.
I think that staff may like you to repeat near the end of your
just six.
Motion. Number six.
Six was economic viability.
Viability or benefit?
We could say both, viability and benefit, if that's, I think both of them are important. Benefit, you like it? So you want both or just one? So economic benefit. Okay.
Do we have to amend that or is that still in process?
You don't, but clearly underlying issue is the viability of the so it's not like you're not going to consider that.
Yep.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so we have a second.
I never know.
Second by Ms. Johnson, motion by Mr. Smuckler. Any further discussion? Mm-hmm. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. Good work. Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Do we need to take a short recess or are we ready to continue on? You're ready to go? Okay. Item C3. Item C3 is introduction of ordinance number 608, which amends sections 3.08.100 and 3.08.110 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code, providing for cooperative purchasing procedures, piggybacking, and adoption of resolution number 6816, rescinding resolution 4407. This is a public works staff report. And
just give me a second here.
We're looking.
How to get my three slides up? This will be very brief. Sorry.
Let's be very brief staff report. This is actually mainly a cleanup item to fix something we did in 2007 to do it right now. The California government code requires that to allow us to use cooperative purchasing procedures that we need to incorporate that into our municipal code as an ordinance. And here's the recommendation. It's right out of the staff report. I put it up there for your reference in case there's a motion later on. I'll come back to that in just a second. A little bit of background that I alluded to. In 2007, we passed Resolution 4407 that authorized the use of cooperative purchase agreements piggybacking. Unfortunately, California government code requires the city to adopt that policy by ordinance, and therefore the resolution is not adequate. It allows the city to use piggybacking or cooperative purchasing agreements allows the city to utilize competitively bid processes for the purchase of materials, equipment, and supplies without going out for an individual bid. And the city can receive cost savings through economies of scale. Just want to point out that this does not require that we do piggybacking. It's only if it's to our advantage that we would do that. So I'm going to go back to the motion slide, and that concludes my staff report.
Okay. With that, any questions from Council? John? None? No questions? I have no speaker slips, but I will officially open up public comment. Seeing none, I'll close public comment, bring it back to Council, and I'll take a motion. Staff recommendation? So I think we'll just do staff recommendation. Or I'll just read it into the record.
That's good. Yeah.
You don't need to read it because it all is listed right there.
Staff recommendation as presented.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. Motion by Mayor Irons, second by Councilmember Heading. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0.
Thank you.
That moves us on. That moves us on to item C4, review of resolutions to be considered at the annual League of California Cities conference. Mr. Buckingham.
Staff doesn't have a presentation, or this is just for your consideration, so you are aware of what is going to be considered at the annual League of California Cities annual conference.
So we have one resolution at the annual League of California Cities conference where, as your delegate, I'll speak a little bit to this, as your delegate, I would represent the city, and there would be a motion of all the cities at this one particular conference. Over the past few years, there's been this process that we go through. This year, there's only one resolution that's with the conference. The resolution is committing the League of California Cities to supporting Vision Zero towards zero deaths and other programs or initiatives to make safety a top priority for transportation projects and policy formulation while encouraging cities to pursue similar initiatives. We have, obviously, the content of that in our staff report. The other part of that, just for the viewing public, you know, this is there is a policy committee with the California League of Cities that will be reviewing these types of things. This isn't necessarily a policy for the city for the city of Morro Bay at this time, but it is a position that the League of California Cities will take. So that's how it's rolled out. Any further comments? So I'll open it for public comment. Anybody like to speak to this item? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back for a motion. I had moved staff recommendation to provide direction to approve resolution number one as stated in the staff report for the voting delegate, which would be the mayor at the California City's annual conference resolution.
Mr. Mayor, you may want to add to that and provide you the authority to make decisions because other things may be added to that meeting.
Okay.
So you may want to
And provide me authority to represent the city.
And report back on what you decide.
Back. motion and then, discussion?
Well, I'll second for discussion if you'd like.
Okay. just since there is an alternate, should you or not be there, would you mind including the authorization for the alternate if that alternate had to attend and make that decision to also be included?
Can you handle that?
Yes. And thanks. So our alternate at the league's conference would be Mr. Heading?
Just
okay. So.
And with the same authority that you have if you're
okay.
Not there.
So I will amend my motion to include the alternate with the same authority. I need a second.
Second.
So a motion and a second. A motion by Mayor Irons, second by Councilmember Johnson. Any further discussion? Thank you for that. Great. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. Thank you. And a declaration of future agenda items. I have a couple.
Oh, wow.
We need to appoint a mayor pro tem. Mm. So at the next council meeting, we need to at least have that staff report to have a mayor pro tem during Councilmember Makowetzi's absence. So do I have support for that?
Yes, absolutely.
We have So
yes, as long as it's Councilmember Heading, I have support.
Okay, so we have support on that. And then the other item I have is Coral Avenue property. So the question on the sale of the property and the proceeds, I'd like to have that discussion. So we can review what past resolutions, directions has come with the sale of that property, have that discussion, and give direction on that based on that. So we have one, two.
Let's see. We do have an ordinance, but a number of cities are. Pardon me. Are re-reviewing their marijuana ordinance in light of the potential passing of the initiative. So I don't necessarily need to have us put that on the agenda now, but for future consideration to think about it, because there may be some need for some changes pending the vote.
Mayor Irons, that's actually on our goals and objectives for this year to start up.
Okay, we're good
January.
On that.
Thank you.
So did we get we got three people or four people support on the Coral Avenue thing. Was there all four?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, good.
Mayor Irons, can I ask a question on that? Point. So based on the consent item agenda tonight, that is almost certainly not going to close in 90 days.
Which,
Coral Avenue.
Yep.
Could well be a year and a half until
sure.
It closes. Do you want to make that decision soon, knowing that it may be a year and a half and things could change between now and then, or you just want to have a discussion on what your options are?
Let's have the discussion on what our options are and the history of that, and then we can take it from there.
Okay.
And if it means that a year from now it's discussed again, then we have some conversation, at least at this point.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. And with that, if there's no other items to be discussed, our next regular meeting will be held Tuesday, September 27th, 2016 at 6 p.m. right here at the Veterans Memorial Hall. Meeting adjourned? Meeting adjourned. All right. Good night.